Tonight, we chat with Chicago lifeguard legend Joe Pecoraro. Then later, comedian Pete Lee stops by the Showcase studio. And finally, we get a legal face-off preview from Rich Lenkov. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Craig, I'm a little bit nervous. I told you that before we started. I my old boss is in our office.
Yeah, he's just right out there.
That's really weird. He's also in the swimming hall of fame and all kinds of stuff.
Is it as weird as when you had your ex-boyfriend on just earlier this week?
No, this is weirder. No,
okay.
Because Kevin Naughton and I worked together for a long time. But Joe's like a legend. Like, they're guards right now listening, and I have a lot of pressure on me to make sure I do this well.
Do you think he'll critique your form in this job?
He was one of the most generous and kind men I've ever met.
Awesome.
Ran a service that was at the time regarded as the greatest lifeguard service in the world. We were actually like examples for lifeguard services in Japan and California, New Jersey. I remember Jersey guards coming in. So I am I'm a little bit nervous. I'm also exhausted. You and I had sort of different nights. You went to go see a performance. What did you go do tonight?
I saw the Potted Potter show.
Are they high?
No. It's just called Potted Potter. I don't know
why. It's potted. It sounds like they might maybe.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why they call it that. And they create other shows. They're also potted. I don't know what that word is. They're British.
P-O-T-T-E-D?
P-O-T-T-E-D.
Okay.
It's called Potted Potter. And they've also made like a potted some other famous stuff.
But the Potted Potter show, Craig, doesn't it take all 52 Harry Potter movies and bring it into like an hour and a half?
It's 70 minutes. There's just two guys. It's a two person show, and they do all seven books in 70 minutes.
And how was it?
I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. There are a couple kind of British jokes, but then they make fun of those even and say, oh, wait, this doesn't work in America. So they even reference,
we're not going to get stuff?
Yeah. There's two things we don't get in 70 minutes. I think that's okay.
That's
and we also play Quidditch as a group, so that's fun.
Well, how do you play Quidditch as a group?
There's some rule changes. We don't all get to fly around on brooms, but it's fun. There's a beach ball involved.
What a jip.
I know. I mean, there's at least one guy on a broom.
All right, then.
Right. We lost, though. Our side lost, so that was... But I was Slytherin, so I was supposed to lose.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm a Slytherin.
You know, sorting hat for you? Just
no.
You're Slytherin?
They just told me halfway through.
That's just wrong.
I know.
It's wrong. I went to the Linkin Park members-only event for the zoo lights, which was beautiful. They have ice skating in the park this time in the zoo. We didn't go do that. I don't ice skate. I don't know if we've ever discussed this. I don't do that.
You don't as in you never have? Or
no, I have and I can't. Okay. It's like the singing thing in me.
I think we had to talk about this because we were at that Blackhawks thing. Maybe that was last year where they had the ice skating rink.
I didn't go to that.
Yeah, I did. I loved that part.
And I also went to another place that had more ice skating. I went to Winter Wonderfest at Navy Pier tonight.
Right, that thing.
Much fun. Declan was dancing and running up and back and forth. I have to post a picture of him. At one point, he just laid down. He was just lying in the middle of the whole thing. Just decided that was it. He was done. A teaching moment with some children that I thought that I was handling well, but I couldn't wrap my arms around it. There were boys in front of us that kept turning around and staring at Declan, and finally one of the boys, I would say they were 9, 10 years old. Declan is also 10, but is nonverbal, is significantly impaired physically and intellectually, and one of the boys finally turned around and goes, "What's the matter with him?" And I was very patient, and I said, "He's missing a part of his brain right down the middle," and he goes. He goes, "What?" I said, "He's missing a part of his brain, so it affects him." That's what he's got. What about yourself? And he goes, "What?" I go, "Well, what's wrong with you?"
Yeah, what is your issue?
He didn't go the way I'd hoped it would.
Did he just keep saying what?
No, he goes, "Is he going to get better?"
Oh, nice.
I was
good.
Like, I was like, what? I didn't even.
Don't become a doctor, young child. Just don't. Seek out that.
And they kept turning around and staring at him, and Declan kept wanting to go on that particular slide, and they kept being in front of us. So finally this woman came over to check on them, and I go, "Oh, are you with these boys?" And she said yes, and I stuck out my hand. I said, "Hi, I'm Patty. I'm Declan's mom, and I'm not sure which one is yours, but perhaps you might want to let these boys know that when they are talking to a child with special needs or their mom, asking these questions are not kind." So that was,
and they're also terrible people. You're raising terrible people.
I did not say that.
Okay.
And then she went, "Who asked?" And
good.
Apparently it was Jake. Jake was the one asking the questions.
Is Jake getting in trouble right now?
No, she said, well, Jake should know better because apparently he knows somebody who has special needs, but
okay.
It doesn't help him.
Yeah, it doesn't. That's not at all.
So that was my Winter Wonderfest. But Winter Wonderfest
thanks
was,
a lot, Jake.
It's just weird to get taken out of like having fun and these kids just constantly asking questions. I didn't really know. I haven't been asked in a while, so I thought I was going to be handling it cooler,
right.
And I was
no,
not.
No, I think you did a great job.
No.
And I think Jake has learned some things.
Mm-mm. I was a little smug. I was a little smug with some 9-year-olds.
Well, Jake was pretty smug. No. He deserved a little smugness.
Yeah, but why do I have to go to his level? I tried being like, well, he's missing a part
I
of
know.
His
body. Well, he needs to learn lessons in life, though. Everybody's not nice just because you're
them.
A small child.
I tried everything. I tried being friendly. I tried being smug. I tried, and then finally I had to be a tattletale.
From the 309, is asking questions how we learn, though?
That's why I was trying, but like constantly. I mean, so
yeah,
am I supposed to answer every question everywhere I go?
Right.
What's wrong? But by the way, what's wrong with him?
The tone.
Is that yeah. How you want to ask? Is that how you would like to be addressed?
Right. If you're
when
asking.
I'm in line with my child
exactly.
To go on a slide. What's wrong with him? Is he going to get better? So do I have to answer those kinds of questions all the time?
If you're asking a question with actual intent to learn, it probably sounds different than the way they were asking.
Yeah,
it.
These are 9-year-olds who, I'm supposed to satisfy their curiosity, I guess. Is that going to improve them somehow?
No, they're like terrible kids.
I'm saying.
Throw them out of Winter Wonderland.
I just don't know how else I could have handled it.
Right.
Except do I ignore them? Do I just not say anything?
I don't know. Hope somebody pushes Jake tomorrow.
No, that's not what I hope.
Right.
All right, let's.
Me neither.
I'm prattling on because my boss is coming in. My former boss. Coming up after this, we are going to talk to the former head of the Chicago Lifeguard Service, Joe Pecoraro. More after this on 720 WGN. It's pretty late.
Some people stand in the darkness, afraid to step into the light. Some people need to help somebody with the air just surrender.
Craig, are you seriously playing the theme music from Baywatch?
Yeah. All Lifeguards, right?
All right.
This is Lifeguards.
Was that Joe?
This is accurate.
It's an accurate portrayal, and it's not. It's not far from about the time that I was serving as a lifeguard. Those of you who listen to the show regularly, you know that I will reminisce once in a while about my years at North Avenue Beach. There are moments in my life that are the biggest parts of who I am. I think starting with my biggest memories are being a Girl Scout, being a lifeguard, being a stand-up comic, being a radio host, being a mom. And being a guard changed me forever. I wasn't supposed to end up at North Avenue Beach. I was supposed to be a guard at Norwood Park Pool. My dad had pulled some strings to make sure that I would end up there. But when I arrived at our assignment day, because I was there on the first day, I was asked by one of the mates at North Avenue if I might not be interested in working there. And so that's how I ended up working at North Avenue Beach, not knowing, having no idea that I was at one of the greatest beaches in the world. Many of you may not realize that. I don't know how to tell you. We have the greatest beach in the world in Chicago. Actually, in Chicago, we have over 26 miles of lakefront. And at one point, for many years, for decades, my guest in studio, who is idolized by many of us who served with the Chicago Lifeguard Service, Joe Pecoraro, was the director of the Lifeguard Services. Joe, how are you doing tonight?
All right. Okay.
How old? Well, first, what neighborhood did you grow up in, Joe? Let's start there.
I grew up almost same neighborhood as you, right next to Portage Park. I learned to swim at Portage Park.
You did? How old is that pool? Is that pool been the same pool?
The pool's been remodeled three times.
Three times?
Since those days,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So were your parents avid swimmers that took you out to the pool?
My dad was not a swimmer. My mother, you could call her a swimmer, but
yeah.
She went in the water. Let's put it that way.
So, but you took to the water pretty quickly.
Right, yes. Yeah.
So did you spend a lot of summers at Portage?
I got into high school and swam for Schurz.
Mm-hmm.
And I also swam for Wright and DePaul.
Okay.
So that was my competitive. And then in the United States Army.
You swam in the United States Army?
Right.
For the water polo team?
No, swimming team. I ended up being the coach because the coach became the softball coach.
For the U.S. Army, you were the swim coach for the U.S.
In Far East, in Japan.
Okay, and what year was that?
1954.
And that was when you took a couple years off. You would become a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach in 1949?
49, right.
Yeah. So what led you to become a guard at North Avenue?
Well, you just as you know, you took the test and you walked in the office and they told you where you were going.
Was it at North Avenue too? Were the assignments at North Avenue?
They were in the office at North Avenue in those days.
The same way when I was there. What was that? What was the nook called? The upstairs part of the boathouse at North Avenue. What was that called? The crow's nest.
Crow's nest. Yeah. I never used it because it was too far away from the beach.
It was too far away from the beach.
Yeah. When I was captain at North, everybody knew who I was because I stood on the sidewalk in front of the beach house.
Really?
I had people come up to me and say, I know you. You're the guy that stands in front of North Avenue Beach.
Okay.
That was what but I could see the whole beach from there. So that's why.
And that was something that you instilled for decades, was the way we watched the water. From the day I was a rookie, we stood in line, military style. Now, was that something you had brought into the lifeguard service?
Yes. I was a guard before I went in service. But after I came out of service, I had the chance of being an instructor and took my military training and put it in the guard school.
And what was the reaction when you did that, when you decided to use that?
No problem. It was yes, sir, no, sir.
Really?
All the boys got a haircut, and they all were clean shave.
Well, there you go.
You couldn't do that nowadays, but that's the way it was.
Well, we'll get to that in a little bit, because I know how much it's changed even since I was a guard at North. But, you know, there was already a tradition with the Chicago Park District Lifeguard Service. Was it Sam Leone who had come in and had taken over in the 30s?
Sam Leone was up north, and he was in the city. We had two lifeguard services, the city of Chicago and the Chicago Park District. And Sam was a great old, he was worse than me, he was tougher than I was. He wouldn't let a park lifeguard on his beach. He wouldn't.
Oh, really?
That's the way he was. But then we got to be good friends because I taught his nephew how to swim. And his nephew wouldn't work for him. He went and worked for me.
That's how you got to be friends. Well, you have a great story. I think it's a Naked Rescue, your book that you've written about the Chicago Park District Lifeguard Service, about Sam Leone. There had been a drowning off hours, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't even during when the guards were on duty. And he fired the guards in the morning. Tell us a little bit about that. Do you remember?
Sam was a tough, you know, he didn't want drownings, period.
Right.
So if there was anything wrong, he'd jump right in there and he wouldn't stand for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you better be alert and on your job all the time.
Right.
Well, no different than ours, but he was tougher.
Yeah, well, you were pretty tough. The style of training that you instilled for decades was pretty tough. But I think the story was that he fired the guards because they should have been training the patrons on how to know how to swim at that part of the beach.
Yeah, that could be.
Yeah, and then I think he ended up hiring them back, but he wanted to teach them a lesson.
You know, we guard mainly from boats.
Yes.
And I found out an interesting thing. I was in Vancouver, Canada, and I walked on the beach and saw the same type of lineman boats that we have.
Right.
So I talked to the captain up there, and it's one of two things. Either we learn from them or they learn from us.
Oh, no, we don't know which one it is?
We don't know which one it is, but identical boats and guard identically the same way.
Well, those boats, how long have you had those boats with the Chicago Park District?
Well, the boats, we used to have the wooden lineman boats. Then in 1966, I went up and we went to Iowa. We had a mold made of the boats, and then they're all fiberglass now.
Okay.
And they last forever.
Yeah, and I used to carry some of those boats because part of our daily routine was in the morning we'd carry them from the North Avenue Boathouse down to the water, and they were about, if I recall correctly, they're about 500-pound boats.
They were heavy.
Yeah,
they were heavy. Right.
Yeah, you definitely wanted to be on the bow of one of those. If you were stern, I mean, I could three man one of those boats, but I had to be on the bow. Those are heavy boats.
Those are heavy boats, yeah.
But now they just chain them up on the lakefront.
Right. They don't carry them up every night like we had to.
It was a little character building. I don't know. There was something about that. Do they do that because it's just more convenient?
Well, they were safer inside.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever work in the old building?
I did. I worked in, yes. We don't have to talk about what year it was, but yes, I definitely worked in the in the old boathouse.
Those of us who love the beach love the old beach house.
Well, because it was ours. It was the lifeguards building.
Right.
Yeah, now it's a, you know, it's a party joint. Yeah.
You know what I say? It's a glorified concession stand. That's what it is.
And, you know, the city's got to make some money.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But, I always wanted it to be the lifeguards' home.
Yes, and it was.
In my day, when I first started, with a lot of veterans from World War II.
Right.
Going to school, working their way through school mm-hmm. as lifeguards.
Right.
Well, I learned fast from those guys.
What kind of things did you learn?
Well, the one thing I knew is if you go out with the boys, you show up for work with the boys.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things that was also part of the, I would say, the tradition of being a guard at North Avenue was you worked hard and played hard, but right. you better show up and be ready to work.
You better be, no excuses.
None whatsoever.
No excuse.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the tradition that you built, the style of lifeguarding, I think the attitude, the work ethic that we all had, it's impressive the impact that you had for so long and having one of the safest lakefronts in the world. Which I remember when you came to our banquet and you were just so very proud of the work that we all did. And it made us want to work harder.
You think about, we average somewhere between 3 and 7 million people on the lakefront mm-hmm. on a weekend. And everyone's in your hands.
Right.
And if you goof up, somebody dies. Mm-hmm. So it was the kind of a job you had to be on the ball all the time.
Right.
Well, and with it, we were. They were. They're the best. Our guards have gone on to be firemen, policemen, mm-hmm. in the service. They've all done what and over the years that I worked, 50 years, I probably can't name 2 or 3 that ever were in trouble.
Well, I can't thank you enough for the experience, the tradition that I inherited, the being part of that. We're going to continue this conversation. We have to take a quick break here. We're talking to Joe Pecoraro. If anybody has any questions, you're welcome to give us a call and join the conversation. We're at 312-981-7200. His book, Naked Rescue, is available on Amazon.com. And we will continue with Joe because there's a lot of stories. This man is filled with a lot of stories. And I just have a couple of goofy ones. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and we've been talking to Joe Pecoraro. Do you prefer Joe? Is Joe okay? I feel like I should be calling you Joseph. If you Google you
No.
No, Joe.
Nobody know who Joseph is.
So I think there's a guitarist or an actor named Joseph Pecoraro, but we've got Joe Pecoraro, the former director of the Chicago Park District Lifeguard Service. Actually, I love every page that you try to find information for you. They always say, in 1949, he took a summer job as a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach on Lake Michigan and never left except for a 2-year stint in the U.S. Army Field Artillery, where he taught swimming to the 1st Cavalry Division in Tokyo and spent much of his service at North Avenue Beach. And in 1974, became the manager of all beaches and pools in Chicago. And your book, Naked Rescue, has a lot of great chapters. You were telling me off the air that the year you had your first women that were lifeguards, what year did the women start serving with the Park District?
It was 69.
Okay, 1969.
We had 5 girls. We mm-hmm. handpicked them. Uh-huh. And they all worked at North Avenue Beach.
Well, there you go.
My boss, Wee Berry, was going to have a heart attack because he's old school and you just didn't have girl lifeguards.
What encouraged you, what inspired you guys to start hiring women?
The United States government.
They said do it or else.
It caught up.
Well, I mean,
with
look,
us.
It's hard. It was, you know, it's a different time of life. I mean, you know, you served in the military. There wasn't, there was a division racially, gender wise. You know, there was a branch of the military service during World War II, the WASPs and the WAVES,
wax. Yeah,
the WACs. And, but yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of history. I understand the kind of constraints. How did you handpick 5 women to serve in the lifeguard service?
Well, they
were girls. I'm guessing they were teenagers.
Yeah. They were all young girls, and I knew most of them because they competed in our Park District swim meets.
Okay.
And they were some of the best swimmers that we had.
Okay.
And they turned out to be the best, toughest, greatest girls in the world.
Because they had something, they had to, you know, they had a lot of responsibility, I'll bet, to be the first 5.
That's it.
Yeah.
And they took all kinds of crap that poor girls got a lot of heat from the boys.
Yeah.
But they were tough.
Mm-hmm.
They were tough.
Yeah, because, you know, the test, how much did the test change over the years? Because when I did it, I believe it was a 200 swim for time.
Right.
And then you had to dive in the well at Whitney Young Pool for a 25-pound weight.
Right.
And then you had to do an escapes front and back.
Right.
And that means, explain what an escape is.
We didn't change the test for the girls. They took exactly the same. They did a front head release, a rear head release, cross chest carry. The one thing I did have to change was our weight requirements.
Okay.
We had a weight requirement of 145 pounds.
Okay. Minimum for the guards had to be 145.
Right. Well, some of the girls were not that big.
Right. But at the time, neither was I when I served. I was 118 pounds. I remember fondly when I was 17, 118 pounds. Yes.
But if they could pick up the brick from mm-hmm. the bottom of the pool, I don't care how much they weighed.
Right.
That was the same test that the boys took, so that was it.
And if they were competitive swimmers, I'm guessing that wasn't too hard for them to do.
I remember that in the early days, for Venetian night, I'd have got girl guards there,
uh-huh.
but I had two of the biggest monster boy lifeguards on either side. So if you gave the girls a hard time, mm-hmm. you got a hard time.
So the girls were there to help protect lives, and the guys were there to help protect the girls. You actually had me one time. I got to have, now I'm going to date when I was a lifeguard, but that's okay. I was it was the All-Star game that was being played at Comiskey. Do you remember they had a party at Navy Pier?
Right.
And you had guards. We guarded along the rocks to make sure that none of the ball players, you know, they were there with their family, with their
in.
Yeah, that they wouldn't be out there drinking. I actually met Jose Canseco and I believe Mark McGuire. I can't remember, but yeah, I met a few of the ball players.
Well, wait for Chicago Fest and things like that. They uh-huh. used to have them at Navy Pier. Mm-hmm. We always had a group of guards in case somebody fell, and they did make a few rescues,
right?
Or somebody get drunk and
exactly.
jump in. So we had guards there for. We all saw Frank Sinatra.
He was number two.
What was that? Ro Concho is chiming in.
Yeah, that was a that was a
very. I apologize for that. That was a hot button. Hilarious.
The stage was between Navy Pier and the filtration plant,
mm-hmm.
and we brought the boat within 20 feet of Sinatra.
Really?
Because we were on the water and
sure.
nobody in front of us, and we got to see him. Also,
nice.
One of the biggest coups we pulled was the Blues Brothers.
Oh.
Because Murphy Dunn mm-hmm. is one of the Blues Brothers, was a lifeguard at North Avenue for me.
Nice.
And they came in and we put them on the boat, took them out to Navy Pier, and it was great. They were cool.
Yeah, that had to be a fun night too. Good times. Yeah, you've had so many experiences. One of the chapters that my writing partner and I, Kevin Cleary, really love about Naked Rescue was when the first Mayor Daley wanted to open up pools all over the city, in particular in Black and Hispanic neighborhoods. So, I mean, explain a little bit. That was kind of to keep Black people from going to the beaches.
That was in the 60s, mm-hmm. and the mayor decided the best way to keep the city cool was to put pools in the neighborhood for these kids to swim because mm-hmm. they were opening up all the fire hydrants.
Okay.
We were losing water pressure.
Right.
So they built about 40 pools in one summer.
40 pools in one summer?
They were all backyard pools. They were all 3 feet deep, most of them. There were some deep ones built, but they were behind firehouses, behind police stations, in the middle of a. And there was one in Cabrini in the middle of the street.
What?
And I had. The biggest challenge was on the south side in Robert Taylor Home
mm-hmm.
because there were 5 buildings. And I could only hire the guards who lived in the building in front of the pool.
Why is that?
Because you couldn't work there unless you lived in there.
Oh, for territory?
If you wanted to work there, it might be your last day working.
Wow.
So my recruiting was done in each building, mm-hmm. you know. And I remember on the west side, Old Galt Park, there was a guy by the name of Darius Edwards. Darius drove a brand new Cadillac every year.
Whoa.
And he was a lifeguard. I asked no questions because
uh-huh.
Darius ran the pool. And
right.
He did a good job. That's all I. That's why we were.
That was
there.
Your job, right?
Make sure everybody got home, and they had a respect for the kids in the neighborhood,
right?
because they knew that was the pool was for the kids.
Right. So they wanted to protect the kids in their neighborhood.
Right.
How about Humboldt Park? When was that lagoon built?
They decided to build a pool at Humboldt. Oh, that was probably about the same time in the 60s. Mm-hmm. They dredged it, mm-hmm. put sand on the bottom, had a constant flow of the water, and it was like having a lake right in your own backyard.
Right.
And the neighborhood loved it.
Oh, sure.
I was kind of disappointed this year when they closed it.
Yeah, was it funding?
But they're going to open it up.
They are.
They fixed it up.
Who's in charge of the lifeguard service now? Is it still Eric Fisher?
Eric Fisher, yeah.
Okay. Eric Fisher's in charge of it.
But, I mean, that was a decision made in the park district.
With the funding.
But it just can't. There's no swimming pool in that neighborhood, mm-hmm. except maybe Humboldt, which is quite a ways away.
Right.
So, I mean, they took the swimming away from the neighborhood. That bothered me.
Right, because I was also, it was basically like a little landlocked beach for the neighborhood. Because the guards there do guard from the boats, too.
We did the same thing at Douglas Park, mm-hmm. but that's gone.
Yeah.
They made that into a golf course.
They filled that one in. We are hanging out with Joe Pecoraro. He's the legendary director of the Chicago Park District. Manager. Is it manager, director, head? What word do you prefer? What was your title at the Park District? Superintendent. Oh, Nancy, you can get on the microphone. Nancy was you were a lifeguard too. Dad got you a job. Yeah. We don't have to talk about the. I was gonna say we didn't have to tell anybody that you may have fudged your age on the application.
I'm 60 now.
We're gonna catch up more with Joe when we come back. If you want to join our conversation, if you have any questions about our lakefront and our lifeguard service, beaches and pools, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Or if you just have a memory to share, that would be great too. More after this on 720 WGN. I am totally nervous. Have I ever been this nervous with a guest before? I don't think I have. That's my former boss, Joe Pecoraro. He was the superintendent of beaches and pools for the Chicago Park District. Joe, we have a listener on the line. Come on closer to the microphone. And we have Terry. Hey, Terry, how are you doing?
Hi, good evening. Joe Pecoraro, Terry Tobin. I worked for you 50 years ago. Dave Cicero must have been one of the big names that ran North Avenue and Glenn Smith and... in any event, and of course, Mike Conforti, the Chicago Police, 18th District. You must know Mike,
right?
And who, in regards to that, who started the Air and Water Show? Was that you?
That's
too,
a great question.
L. Benedict is the one who started the Air and Water Show. He was the park supervisor at Lakeshore Park,
right?
And the first show was a raft out in front of the park at Chicago Avenue.
What year was that?
Right.
Oh, God, I can't even remember the year.
Or,
but he paid it. He got them to tow a raft out there.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Had a grease pole. He had a water ballet, lifeguard boat race.
There were no Blue Angels in those days.
Right.
And the first air act was the Glenview Air and Water Rescue. Rescue.
Wow. Yeah. Terry, how long?
Back to that test, you know, getting to be a lifeguard and the brick and all that kind of thing. When we did show up at North Avenue Beach, you know, rookie year, rookie day, and you had to run from North Avenue to Fullerton around the peanut stand and back. And who was the first one in out of 200? Well, I was the last quarterback at DePaul Academy, and we made that run, and it was a bet because I had to be the first of my other pals coming back in, and they said, "Boy, you're good. Now do it again and beat the last guy in." That was Dave Cicero.
Yeah, Dave, right. That's it.
Yeah.
But it was very good, and I give the guards here a hard time at Edgewater Beach, Harry Osterman Beach, our alderman here, and I look them right in the face, and as their eyes on the water, I said, "Tell me now, how many people in the water?" You know, that's what was the old test, too, you know. How many people are in the water as you're on the beach, you know?
Well, Terry, that was one of the things I was thinking about was the sort of tradition and the work ethic that we had as lifeguards.
Exactly.
Well, it was that you mentioned rookie day and that rookie year. Did you guys have to do the just epic number of push-ups?
Oh, sure. All the military stuff, all that. Yeah, but we had, you know, athletic training in the day. You know, that was, you know, before 16. That was earlier. But
did the mates and captains haze you guys a little bit too? Because we had to play, like, we would have lunch, and then next thing you know, we're playing Dizzy Izzy's in the sand.
Right, or anything else. But the rowing contest, Joe. Yeah. Of course, we'd see Joe's boat show up, and you better be standing at attention when Joe's boat came around the bend. Wow, whoa.
they knew I was coming. They didn't think I was that naive. They'd call ahead, say, he's coming down the line.
Right. Yeah, boy.
So you'd be at the bow of that boat with the binoculars on. And that, you know, he was taking numbers. But the rowing contest, and you had to feather the oars and all that stuff made a big difference in winning those rowing contests, you know.
We had one rule on the push-ups. Uh-huh. If you had the kids do the push-ups, all the instructors do the push-ups with them.
Right,
I think that was what we did, too.
Yeah,
and that
included the old man if I was standing on the porch. I had to do it, too.
Glenn Smith or not, but I don't think he was a part of that.
Glenn Smith, do you remember Glenn Smith?
Oh, yeah. I went to high school with Glenn Smith. I went
he
to high school with Glenn
pounds,
Smith.
He ran about 300 pounds, you know, but he was a good man, you know. So.
Yeah, right.
How long did you work at North Avenue, Terry?
I was actually up north, and he talked about Sam Leone, and I was at the north end, north line, they called it. But Sam would still be there with that big boat he had. Didn't he have that big old...
The Alert,
yeah. Mm-hmm. He saved many people out in the lake. He'd jump in that boat and go.
Yeah.
Did you work for Clarence Becker?
Up there. And we had everything. I was at actually with Albion Beach or Neil Hardigan Beach is where was. And we had to row in every night to Tui Beach. You know, and at Northeaster, that was kind of tough. Not like my brother. He was at Juneway Terrace, and the last one there that you were talking about, you know, to teach the... And they had little two-way radios to communicate, and 9:30 at night, bring that boat in. Well, there's waves are running about 7-8 feet, you know. So you had to row out to Evanston and catch a wave to carry you into Tui.
Terry, when you go to the beach, do you have a tough time relaxing? Do you still keep an eye on how the guards are working?
Keep an eye. Well, we're lucky here at Edgewater, at Osterman Beach here, the old Hollywood, that it's fairly shallow, you know. But some of those beaches can be rough. North Avenue runs deep, you know.
Yeah, it does. I know.
Right. And Foster, you know, you got to be careful, you know. So, and keep an eye on the toddlers. That's everything, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I always, it always made me crazy when parents would just like walk away from their kids as though we were the babysitters.
Right.
Yeah.
And Joe Pecoraro, I'll tell you, you know, the ball in the water with the west wind. Kids will chase that beach ball, you know.
Right.
Yeah, we didn't let any balls in the water. No balls, no water wings, no flotation devices.
Right, right. So those are rules that save lives, you know. So, well, God bless you. And Ed Kelly, too. He was he had that Wells Park he built in our day, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's a great park.
Right. Well, so great to talk to you, and other people want to talk. But
remember this, lifeguards for life.
That's right.
That's right. You know, we're Semper Fi. You know, we're all once a lifeguard, always a lifeguard.
Hey, Terry, do you get on Facebook at all? Because a bunch of us, we get together a couple times a year, whether regards from the types.
I'm too old for thank God I got a landline.
If I remember and there's an event coming up, I'll try to let you know on the air, all right?
Here at Edgewater Beach. All right. Great to talk to you, and Merry Christmas to all.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Terry. Thank you so much. Yeah, there's a lot of guards who never let their guard down, really, when we're in the water. When I guarded at a pool at University of Illinois, people hated me because I was a mean guard. But I wasn't there for you to have fun. I was there to make sure that you didn't die.
Right.
That was always my, you know. He mentioned the Aaron Water show. I ended up sitting in a boat I rotted for about 6.5 hours on beach 4 at North Avenue because, I mean, there's about a million people at North Avenue for the Aaron Water show. It's an epic event.
When we first ran the show at Oak Street, we didn't allow anybody in the water.
Right.
But then Al realized, wait a minute, we were having heat strokes and overheated, people getting sick. So when we went to North, we let them go in the water. We just kept
to the, only to the knee depth only. Do you remember that?
Right.
Only, we couldn't let them go any farther.
They could get wet, and it would keep them from overheating.
Joe, it has been so much fun hanging out with you and talking and reminiscing about the lifeguard service. And I want to have you back soon. Actually, but when we come back, I think we've got a text we want to read before I let you go. More after this on 720 WGN. We've been hanging out with my my old boss. I've never hung out with a boss before. Joe Pecoraro is in the studio, the former superintendent. Lifelong guard. Lifeguards for life. Craig, you said we had a texter.
Yeah, we got a couple quick texts from the 518. Those of us who listen to the show regularly know how much being a lifeguard meant to Patty. A couple things. I was a lifeguard between the ages of 20 and 22, and I remember getting the worst sunburn of my life the first day on the job.
Yes.
Two quick questions, though. Patty, did you ever have to rescue anyone, and does Joe have a rescue story that he'd like to share?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I never had to rescue anybody. I was a really mean guard, and that was something I was taught as a rookie, which meant that I controlled my environment as much as I could. I didn't let people have, as we mentioned, no balls in the water, no flotation devices, because then kids would get out farther than they could actually have their skill level. I always kept an eye on people. If someone seemed like they were in trouble, I would, you know, make my way over and make sure that they were okay. So that was, I never had a rescue. And I consider that to have been a job well done.
I had important rescue. That's why I have the gold ring.
Wait, wasn't it? Come closer to the microphone.
Gold ring was given out for the outstanding rescue of the year.
Uh-huh.
And I had a rescue off Wilson Avenue. And when I looked around, all I had was young lifeguards with me. I had to go out and get a man and a girl, bring them in. We lost a dog, unfortunately, but we pulled the two of them in.
Yeah. You know, well, let's keep Joe, because I know we've got to get to the news. I'm going to keep you for one more segment. Can I keep you up a little bit later?
Okay.
All right. He doesn't seem too sure about that. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I have with me my former boss, but Chicago Park District legend, Joe Pecoraro. I was about to let him go, but we still had some calls and some texters that wanted to join the conversation. But also joining me in studio is comedian Pete Lee, who just shared a lot with my former boss, and I kind of love that. But Joe, you're no stranger to, I think, the kind of personal lives. I mean, you had a lot of teenagers. For decades, you were around drama.
Right.
Especially after you, I'm guessing after you let, you know, you started having women serving with the lifeguard service, that changed the whole dynamic at North Avenue.
I remember my boss almost going crazy. But you know what the biggest challenge for me was when the girls came on?
What?
Buying the bathing suits.
I know. Can I tell you, the suits that we had, they weren't spandex.
No,
Nancy, what were those made out of? Like, they reinforced steel? What was that?
They were horrible.
They didn't, because we had to wear our regular suits, and then we had to wear that suit on top of it. So even if something happened, because then you had to pull it down when you weren't on duty. So it was a very strange system.
So you were there when they had this type of suit?
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy that, like, the tradition continued.
Yeah. All the traditions that Joe had in place, but really most importantly, the work ethic. I think that the level to which for 17 years there were no fatalities on 26.1 miles. How much is it?
29 miles of beach.
Yeah, no fatalities.
And you forget about the 100 swimming pools.
That included the swimming pools?
Yes.
Wow. Wow.
What?
Yeah.
I don't even know why I didn't think of that. I just, for me, it's always the beaches, but of course the pools too. For 17 years, no fatalities.
No.
We don't have to say what's happened since you left. We have Dave on the line. Hey, Dave, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. What did you want to say?
Well, my great uncle was actually a lifeguard at the North Avenue Beach, and I believe it was right around the time when Joe started. It was right after World War II, and he was actually credited with a few rescues and everything. It was actually in the paper, and I don't know too much about, you know, his time there and everything. I was just curious to see if maybe he knew him or had heard of him.
What was his name?
His name was Leonard Fischinski.
Leonard?
Fischinski.
Mm-hmm.
Fischinski.
It's not ringing a bell. But there's a lot of guards that Joe's worked with over the decades.
Yeah.
A lot of characters.
A long shot, but,
yeah, that's all right. Did your great uncle have a lot of great stories about being a guard?
Once a lifeguard, always a lifeguard.
I actually didn't even really know about it until he had passed a few years back through a scrapbook. And he found all these newspaper clippings of rescues that he had done.
Interesting. Hey, do you have a way, Craig, can you grab Dave's email off the air so we can maybe, I'd love to see if you can scan those. We'd love to be able to take a look at those. We have a lot of, like I said, gatherings with the former lifeguards and current lifeguards, actually.
I can talk to my cousins about that.
That'd be great, Dave. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Craig, before you get that, can you tell us what the – were there more texts before we get to Dave's email?
Yeah, we got another text from the 773. So I've been wondering this for a few years now. Why did they stop using 8-foot-deep pools in the neighborhoods? Why did they change all the pools to be 5 feet? I have not been back since that changed. What happened, Joe?
Yeah, the depth of the swimming pools. They changed them from 8 feet to 5 feet. Is that correct?
That's something new.
Okay.
Because the guards are trained to go down 8 feet, you know.
Yeah, yeah, we're trained to go. So, yeah.
Maybe it's cheaper to build the pools. So when we built all those pools in 1 year, they were all shallow.
Yeah.
But now the newer pools are all little 8 feet deep.
Okay. Well, before I let you go, and Craig's taking Dave's information, so I won't throw him under the bus about whether or not our lakefront qualifies as a beach. But I've tried to explain what a seiche is to our audience. Can you explain a seiche? Because they're not very common occurrences on our lakefront.
What creates a seiche is a high pressure area on the other side of the lake, mm-hmm. and it's like dropping a penny in a bowl. Mm-hmm. It creates a wave that continues. And by the time it hits the shore here, uh-huh. it can be as high as 8 or 10 feet.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
The first one was a beauty. I mean, I was standing in the water when it hit, knocked me head over heels, but we lost 7 people on that seiche.
At North Avenue?
One at North, the rest at Montrose, one at 64th.
Okay. And there was, I think that right here at North Avenue Beach, there was a guy that you heard screaming in the restrooms because he'd been in there when the seiche hit. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, the guy at North Avenue went off the pier, and we saw him. We tried to catch him. Mm. And it was like a big toilet in there. Water was swirling. Uh-huh. We had to form a human chain, trap him against the building.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And we're working on them while we're there.
So it's like a
tsunami.
Yeah, it's like a little version of a tsunami, but when a wave hits like that and you're used to little tiny 1 foot waves.
We get warnings now. In those days, you didn't get a warning. Now they'll let you know if the condition's right for a seiche, mm-hmm. and we close the beaches.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and I want to invite you back as soon as we can have you in 2016 to tell more stories, share more of your your insight into this wonderful part of our history. I don't think people realize in Chicago how much we are indebted to you for the tradition that you really brought to the lakefront. Thank you so much, Joe. It's Joe Pecoraro. You can find Naked Rescue on Amazon.com. And we will have you get back again soon because I know that a lot of the guards are listening right now. And they'll probably listen to the podcast. And we'll have that up too so you can share that with everybody. All right? See you soon. All right. Merry Christmas, Joe.
Merry Christmas.
More after this with Pete Lee on 720 WGN. Actually, Nancy Pecoraro on her way out was mentioning that there is a lifeguard event tomorrow night at 7 o'clock in Edison Park at EPI, and that's the Edison Park Inn, so there'll be a bunch of guards there tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. So, Terry, if you're still listening, and Dave, if you want to bring your newspaper clippings, ask your cousins if you can have those, and anyone else who has served in a lifeguard service, we'd love to see you there tomorrow night. I will try to be there. I know there will be some guards from North Avenue. I only have, Pete Lee, I only have 4 more shows, no. 4 more shows left for the rest of the year. You're on one of my last 5 shows of the year.
Really?
Yes, that's it.
That's pretty cool. You know,
I have days off. I have benefits now.
Oh my God, you have days off and benefits? What's that like?
That's so weird. What were you going to say?
Do you remember that I was, you were doing like a trial week when you first started this gig? It was like, you were like, they're trying me out. I hope this is a permanent gig. And then I was one of your guests during that week.
Yes.
And so like.
You were part of my getting hired. Yes. You have been an integral part of my career. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Craig, if I say just the feet for you, you know what that means, right? It's Pete Lee. Pete Lee made that statement, that quote originated with you.
I mean, that made sense, too.
Yes.
Thank you for that recommendation. Yes.
Wait, tell me what just the feet.
I'll tell you off the air.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Some of our listeners know, the ones that listen closely, they'll text in and let us know what that means.
Okay. I like this. I like that we're playing a game.
Well, you and I performed for the first time together in North Carolina at that little. Yeah, we don't even know, do we? It was a little festival, but it was inside a hotel. Like, festivals are usually sort of, a bunch of locations and venues.
Yeah, it started I'm going to remember the name of the place. My girlfriend's parents just went there on like a vacation. Where that's like a destination.
It's a resort.
Yeah.
It's a really beautiful
destination. And were they like, I remember going there being like, what's this place going to be like? And then they had top hats. Like the people greeted you.
Well, do you remember it was built in the side of a mountain? So we entered on like what we thought was the ground level, but really it was, there were like 8 levels down.
Grove Park in Asheville, North Carolina.
That is it?
Or South Carolina.
I just broke the martini glass that they had let me take home with me. It was like their 100, you remember, it was their 100-year anniversary when we were there.
And you got a martini glass?
They gave me an etched martini glass. Remember we were in the lobby with a lot of the people that worked there,
mm-hmm.
Hanging out, having cocktails? Yeah. They said, go ahead and take that. And I just broke it recently. I was making a martini and it smashed. I was very sad.
I remember there was like a really cute girl there that she like... was like really flirting with me, and I was like, no, I'm married, I can't.
Aww.
And then my wife turned out to be a total dirtball, mm-hmm. and now I'm like, man, I should have.
since we last saw Pete Lee, Craig, his wife has, he has parted ways with his wife.
We have parted ways.
Do you like that? Is that
yeah,
how to tell
like
people?
That.
We've parted ways.
Yeah, it was a company. There was a severance package that she got.
I don't know how it's going to be watching divorced Pete Lee perform.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, like, I'm still, I don't know. I think my set is better than it's ever been because, like, I'm happy. You know, like you were saying, I work out less than I used to. And I literally think that I can eat chicken wings, and because I'm happy, my body is like, that's fruit and vegetables.
Your body sees it as nutritional and acceptable.
Something happens with your digestion when you're unhappy that your body's like, we're going to need some fat for this one.
Oh, man. Craig's a lot's changed since we last saw Pete.
Yeah, well, that sounds lovely. That other part about fruits and vegetables being chicken wings now, I want to try that.
Yeah, I say that because I ate, I was at Zany's tonight in Rosemont, and they were like, what do you want for, I was like, I'm so hungry, I need to eat something. I was like, what do you guys have? And she's like, we have pizza, we have chicken wings, and we have a vegetable basket.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, so I ordered a vegetable basket and chicken wings for dinner, and now they're like fighting it out in my stomach like a tornado.
Yeah, that's appropriate.
Yeah.
I mean, you get your protein, you got your veggies and vitamins.
Yeah.
It's all good.
But I'm doing like all of this went down like over a year and a half ago, and then like
that's when we worked together. We worked together in March of 2014.
That was a few months. It was July of 2014 that I got like the bomb dropped on me and whatever, and then I was like doing.
So I've seen you since, but you didn't tell me what was going on. I don't think.
Yeah. Like in the first, because I was at Zany's sometime that fall. It was like in November.
Yeah.
I came by.
You hung out with State Senator Dan Katowski.
Yeah.
I introduced you to the senator.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Right.
I love that guy. Is he calling in tonight? Are we going to talk about laws, the new law, things that should be laws?
We misunderstood the booking. I had you actually scheduled with Katowski for last night in my head, but not on paper. And I apologize to both of you. I am so sorry. You were supposed to be on together. It's true. It was my mistake.
I mean, it's... you know, midnight.
Do you want me to call him?
But yeah, should we call him? Let's call him.
He stepped out. You got divorced and he stepped down from his office. He's no longer a senator. He's now the CEO of an organization called ChildServe, where he helps at-risk children and families. He makes sure that they get the services they need to survive.
That's like the opposite of Dick Cheney, right? You know what I mean? Like that kind of politician that he's like, I just really want to, I was serving the public, but I didn't do enough. Now I'm going to serve families. And like Cheney's like, well, I'm going to go back to Halliburton and get the money that I earned them. You know?
I hadn't really thought of it that way, but it's actually kind of, that seems about accurate.
What a great guy. But mm-hmm. Is that one of those things where you're always a senator? Is he?
I've been told that I'm not supposed to address him as former State Senator Dan Katowski, that you address him as their last office. He said, if you saw Governor Quinn, you wouldn't say former Governor Quinn. And I said, that's not correct. I would actually say, hello, former Governor Quinn.
Out of disrespect?
Just because it's funny to me. I guess I would be disrespectful. Yes, the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, disrespect. That's great. I like disrespectful Patty.
I like to think of it as more mischievous Patty.
I think that's totally allowed, though. You could call him Pat.
Pat. Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat, what's going on?
That'd be nice. Call him Pat.
Instead of mischievous Patty, can we call you pesky Patty?
Pesky, because it has to be an alliteration. Is that why?
Yeah.
When I last saw you, I thought you were married. I thought you were happily married.
Well, yeah.
And you were not.
Yeah. Like, I told you, there's like certain details that I can't talk about.
And you don't have to.
Because I signed an agreement in the divorce.
A non-disclosure agreement?
Yeah, that I would not embarrass her, essentially, is what I'll say.
Right, because you did talk a lot about your relationship while you were married.
Yeah.
And there were things that you were very honest about, like about her weight and her drinking. And
yeah.
Like, he's like, yeah, I can't talk about that anymore.
No, it's the one of the things that you mentioned is like within the divorce thing where I can't talk about it anymore.
That was a part of the contention.
Yeah, like because she held out like a running back that was waiting for a new contract, and she was like, "I'll sign the divorce stuff based upon this." And yeah, like
sorry, I really like that analogy.
I think that Craig's really enjoying divorce, Pete.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Yeah, so it was. I mean. And like
she wouldn't practice or anything.
Yeah, she wouldn't practice. Okay. She wouldn't whatever. And she got a deal that was beneficial to her in financial ways. And then also she wanted to make sure that I didn't talk poorly about her. Like there's a thing that says like I can't.
And you're not. I am. So go ahead.
Yeah, like I can't say certain things into a microphone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, that's cool. And I mean, I wanted my stand-up stuff to be like, because I was like, I'm going to talk about the divorce on stage, but I want to talk about my end of it. I want to talk about like, you know, like, oh, you know, divorce is great. You get to cry in public every day. You know, like I wanted to talk about like that kind of stuff. And like, and I have bits that are really funny about the emotional side of it, but I try not to trash her too hard.
Right.
You know, in the thing, because I always saw comics that were like, yeah, my ex-wife, she was the worst, and blah, and I just feel like that's I know that they did that so that they could vent, but it just seems like a hacky point of view. So like I wanted to focus on the pain of it instead,
which is it has so much texture to it.
Yeah, it has a lot of texture, but yeah, it was. I mean, it was a difficult time. Like, you know, the we'll just say that I got some news in July that really affected me poorly. Uh-huh. And then I'm such a Midwestern guy that I was like, I'm a good guy. I'm going to make the marriage work. And I like worked on the marriage. We went through marriage counseling. I spent thousands of dollars. And then finally, our marriage counselor pulled me in because I was being what I thought was a good guy. Like, I think a lot of guys, I think a lot of people get married because they want to be a good person. Like, this person loves me, and all my friends tell me that I should go with this person. So I'm going to be a good person, and I'm going to marry them. But it's not the right person for them. And, like, for a lot of the marriage, I was trying to make it so that she was the right person for me.
Oh.
But she's...
She's
not. We'll say that. I have no descriptor. She's not.
Not.
She's not a good person. And
no, she's not the right person for you.
Yeah, she's not the right.
I don't know if that's in your non-disclosure. Can you say she's not a good person?
She's not
the right person for you.
The right person for me.
I'm trying to make sure you stay out of legal trouble. It's a good thing we're having a lawyer on after the 12:30. We actually have a lawyer coming on.
Oh, good. I hope the lawyer comes on and is like, you should say everything. Who cares? she can't do a dang thing. You know,
that would be spectacular.
But yeah, but it was weird. Like I went, when I saw you, we were in the thick of the marriage counseling, and I was like, I was convinced that things were going to get back on track somehow, and that I was going to get through the pain of it, and that things were going to be fine, and you know, whatever. But do we got to go to a break?
In just a moment.
Okay. But yeah, but it just, and then when it all fell apart, like I didn't even tell my family about like the bad details of it because I didn't want them, if we worked it out, I didn't want people to hate her.
Right.
You know, and so.
Right. You have to, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I also felt like part of being a good guy is like good guys don't get divorced. But like, you know what good guys do? They take control of their own happiness and they leave people when they're not good for them. And I did that and I'm so happy.
I feel like we just helped a bunch of people out
right
there.
That's really great. By the way, from the 312, not trasher, ? Come on, Pete, let's really get into it.
Let's ask attorney Rich Lenkov after the news if that's advisable. More after this on 720 WGN. We're hanging out with comedian Pete Lee. You can follow him on Twitter.
At Pete Lee Tweets. On Instagram, Pete Lee Sorry. sorry I divorced you. My website is PeteLee.net.
There you go. All those things. And we'll talk more with him when we come back on 720 WGN.
What's up, people? It's that time again. WGN, let's join the two friends. Jason Whiteside and Rich Lenkov in a legal face-off. Hear the knowledge they got. Legal points and counterpoint. Jay, you're not a drill. From sports to Hollywood and the politics world. Don't forget the current events that occur.
This must mean that attorney Rich Lenkov, the more talented and better-looking half of legal face-off, is on the air. Hey, Rich Lenkov, how are you doing?
Good, Patty. How are you?
I'm well. Are there any legal actions against me by Jason Whiteside that I call you the more attractive and more talented half of Legal Faceoff?
He has several count complaints already filed against you for continuing to insult his looks and intelligence. But that's okay. I will defend you.
Oh, I appreciate that. And what do you have coming up on your show with Jason tomorrow?
Big day tomorrow. We've got quite a diverse range of guests. We have Jesse Jackson coming in to talk about everything that's going on with Chicago police.
Do you have Jesse Jackson on to talk about the police department?
What a surprise.
Is there anything in particular going on with the police department?
Yeah, is like bad stuff happening?
Business as usual.
All right. Very good.
We have also a couple of professors on that issue. Mm-hmm. And then we've got sort of from the opposite end of the spectrum, we've got Alan Dershowitz, who's a very, famous attorney professor, talking about a variety of issues. He comes on about once a month, and tomorrow he's talking about the Iraq deal that he wrote a book about recently, and we always pepper him with lots of constitutional issues. So, yeah, some good guests. We've also got a law professor discussing North Korea. But obviously the main topic tomorrow is going to be all of the issues with the Chicago PD.
Oh, wow. Well, now, before we talk a little bit about the Chicago Police Department, it's one of those things where I don't even know which way to come at it anymore. I want to introduce you to comedian Pete Lee, who's in the studio with me. Are you familiar at all with like any divorce laws? And he has finalized a divorce in September. And as a comedian, part of his act has always been the relationships of people in his life, including his wife. But he had to sign something that basically, Pete, go ahead and explain to Rich.
Yeah, well, I was having a hard time getting her to sign the divorce stuff, but she was like, "I'll sign if you put something in there." That basically talks, that basically says that, like, into a microphone, you can't talk about, like, what I did that broke the thing up, you know?
He can't disparage her.
I can't disparage her in that way. But I can't talk about specifically her medical history or a
diagnosis she may have received that may have had something to do with their ultimate breakup.
Or something. Maybe having to do with her. I don't even know how to say it.
Hey, Rich, are we dancing around the line of what's legal for Pete right now?
Well, my favorite part of this is that Pete thought that the best way to handle this legal question was to wait until a lawyer called in to
a radio show
at 12:30 on a Thursday, and maybe I had the answer for you.
How long does that stick? Right. Is there a 10-year statute of limitations on it? Like, can I write a tell-all?
You know, comedian divorce law is a very specific part of the law that you probably need a specialist for.
I agree. I mean, you an entertainment lawyer, and I'm not kidding, because it's you're a creator. You are telling stories all the time. How are you supposed to edit yourself while you're in the middle? Right now on my show, like, you are sort of artificially being held back.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, kidding aside, I mean, listen, you divorce, matrimonial law, family law, you can put a lot of things in an agreement as long as the parties, are bargaining in good faith and they're represented and they know what they're doing. But, there are also limitations of what you can do. There are some things that just are not going to be approved by a court. But what you're talking about, I mean, you could agree to that, but not necessarily something that you want to do, I think,
Yeah.
If that's part of your act.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of what I do, like, on stage, one of the things that I agreed to is that I wouldn't talk about her specifically by name as my wife or my ex-wife on stage anymore.
Right.
So on stage, one of the ways that I've dealt with it is that I talk about her. I just go, I have an ex, it's my ex.
If you don't say ex-wife, it's just more generic.
Yeah. It's more generic. And I've had a lot of exes, so this could be
there you go.
Whatever.
That seems like a way around it, Rich, doesn't it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, It could be her. It could be six or seven other females, maybe, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah, yeah, six or seven. I'm a ladies' man.
You have a bevy of ladies.
Yeah, a bevy of ladies.
Well, let's talk just briefly before we let you go, Rich, about the Laquan McDonald shooting and the ensuing, I guess, the charges that were brought. Rich, was it your sense that Anita Alvarez, the state's attorney, did bring these charges? Do you think she would have brought these charges if they weren't forced and compelled to release the video? Does that seem like some of the direction she was going in?
No, no way. I mean, what are the odds that she decided to do that? File a first-degree murder charge, which is pretty unprecedented in the history of Chicago, the day before a court was going to compel her to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's what I said, and people think I'm crazy, and I don't feel crazy. I mean, for other reasons, maybe, but not on this one.
No, it doesn't. It's strange credibility. There's no way that's just a coincidence. You know, they were fighting the release of the video for over a year, and they were forced to release it by the judge, and that's when she decided to file suit. So, yeah, it's. I think she's going to have a hard time keeping her job. I mean, she had a press conference today where she said there's no way she's resigning, but I think it's going to be a tough road for her.
Yeah, I haven't been a fan of hers for a while, but for various reasons. I just, I was also wondering, you know, when she came down with the charge of first-degree murder, were you surprised by that? Because that seems a little bit harder to prove when it's a police officer rolling up on the scene.
Hmm. Yeah, a little bit surprising. I mean, there's no examples of a Chicago police officer being charged with first-degree murder. But by the same token, given what we saw in the video, given that he shot him 16 times and was trying to reload, you know, I think that's probably the, and, you know, given all the political pressure, it's not that surprising when you think about it that way.
Yeah, I was, what are your thoughts on, you know, the public being able to see this video? Do you think that's something that's is necessary? Because I think that it worked out we need this knowledge is what I think.
Yeah. I mean, the balance obviously is the need to keep evidence fairly confidential, fairly secure so that you can use it to prosecute a case. On the other hand, the public's right to know. The problem in this case was, you know, that shouldn't take 12, 13, 14 months.
Right.
It should, you know, I think any prosecutor looking at that video would have determined that there was at least probable cause to file some sort of charge, and that shouldn't have taken that long. So, you know, because of that and because of all of the ensuing fallout, we're not going to see cities like Chicago try to hold on to that video. I mean, remember, they were litigating this issue for months and months, fighting tooth and nail to prevent the release of this video. So I think that the result is going to be that we're not going to see the city of Chicago, at least, and probably many other cities, fight the release of these videos anymore.
Wow. That's an impressive, I think, move.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Rich Lenkov, you've got your show tomorrow with Jason Whiteside. I won't say he's less talented and handsome. I will say that you are more talented and handsome, and leave it at that. But everyone can go to WGNplus.com to listen to that show and all the shows that you guys have on the site. Is that right?
Thanks. Appreciate it. Absolutely. It's going to be a good show tomorrow, so we appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you so much for calling in. And we'll catch up more with you on a lot of legal stuff when we have a little more time. I only have 4 shows left for the rest of the year, so I'm trying to shove everybody in at the last minute before I take off. So you have a wonderful holiday season. Merry Christmas. And I hope you get some time off, too.
Same to you, Patty. Thanks. And Pete, good luck. Nice to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you. Merry Christmas, legally speaking.
Legally speaking. That's right. More after this on 720 WGN. Hanging out with comedian Pete Lee, and I don't know, are we legally allowed to talk about our former manager on the air? I don't think that we probably wouldn't want. That's too inside baseball for us, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he, it was fun. Yeah, like when we both recently left the same manager,
yeah.
And then now I signed with new management, and they're awesome. Like it's.
I sat down with a management team that said, well, we can't make any money off the deal you just made, we'll talk to you later. Was what
oh,
they, yeah,
okay.
It was actually Alex Murray, who is Jim Gaffigan's manager.
Yeah,
who was our former manager's old partner. Yes,
Cohort, as it were. Yes.
What kind of legal document did you guys sign with this old manager? This is so.
I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Non-disclosure?
He's just. Pete was telling me a story about his experience. So I'll tell you mine on the air.
Yeah.
So you know, The View was looking for a new co-host. They were, in particular, they wanted a Latina, and Chicago's very own Annabella Val from WGN Morning News was flown out to New York to audition for it, and I was like, oh, and I love Annabella Val, but I also thought I could possibly be considered for this spot. So I emailed my manager and I said, hey, you know, they are looking for another co-host for this show. You know, who can you contact? And he goes, can you ask her how she got the audition? I swear.
Oh my God. That's so frustrating.
Which, by the way, I never did. I would never be like, hey, you know that job you're trying to get? How could I maybe take that away from you? That's not how you do this.
He always said he'd be like, you know, a lot of people say that I'm a no guy. You know, and like, I got a bad reputation, you know, but that's not true. And I'm like, but you just, you're a no guy.
Yeah.
You like, you know, there's a thing in improv, you know, that was invented here. Yes. And.
Yes. And.
In this city. Yes. And. And like, I think that as a good manager or agent, sometimes there are ideas that are brought to you.
Right.
And you got to go, no, that's been done. And I know that that won't succeed. But like, for the most part, if you have a creative person working for you, they have a really unique idea and they bring it to you, you say yes and. Yes, all right, I don't know how to do this, but we'll figure it out. And I'm going to try to get you paired up with people who can.
Right.
And I brought a TV show idea to our old manager once. And I was like, this is a great idea. It's like, it'd be like my version of what like Amy Schumer did for, you know, Inside Amy Schumer. Mm-hmm. And I brought it to him and he was like, you know, there's a lot of things wrong with that and da da da. And like, and he kind of shot it down. And then, you know, I told it to a few friends and they're like, that's a good idea. And I was like, yeah, but my manager doesn't think that it will sell and yada, yada, yada.
We stayed with him too long.
Yeah. And so I had my first meeting with my new management like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We sat down and they go, do you have any ideas? And I was like, well, this is an idea I threw out to my old manager, but he didn't think that it would stick for this, and this reason. And they're like, well, what is it? So I told them the idea and they were like, that's a great idea. And like by the end of the meeting, they already had me paired up with a production company. Like they were like, they called the producer in the meeting and they're like, hey, we have an idea. Can we just pitch it to you over the phone? We pitched they were like, yes, come on in for a meeting next week.
They were like, yes, and.
Yeah, yes, and. So like in that meeting, they paired me up with a production company. We already got paired up with a showrunner and a writer. And like, and then next week we meet with two networks about this show idea.
Oh, that's fantastic. Like, yeah. See, isn't that crazy?
Just say yes.
Just say
yes.
Try
it out. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know.
But what's strange about it is that you, I mean, for us, there are certain things that we've accomplished and you're like, how can you not run with that? And like, I shot a pilot for ABC daytime television and nothing after that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, he told me the last conversation we had was he told me I was too old to do the clubs. Was the last conversation that we had. I was like,
that's.
And I was like, no, and.
No, and. No.
He told me that to leave it to kids like Emily Galati. He literally said that to me on the phone.
But, like, I mean, I don't want to, like, share her, you know, her news, but, like, I know that he says things to her that are very, you know, limiting, is
right.
What I'll say. Like, I don't want to talk for her and anything like that. But, like, yeah, I mean, you know, I think that he's very content at this phase in his career to,
right.
You know, to well, collect
and I, and,
checks.
And for
know?
Our listeners, I guess the only way to explain this is if you're, I think for people who are in a position, whatever job you have, if there's somebody who's a roadblock to what you're doing and you know you can accomplish more, you've got to figure out a way around that roadblock.
Yeah, you know? I think for me it was like a self-esteem thing almost.
Yeah.
You know, my new girlfriend, Emily, she's in show business and she's like killing it right now. She's on three TV shows. She's got a movie coming out. She's in that movie Sisters with Amy Poehler and Tina Fey.
Oh, great.
And like she's just like – she's had to like wrestle with a lot of that where she was like, well, I'm not good enough and, you know, success is for those people. And, you know, that she really is subscribed to that kind of like why not me – mentality, and she's killed it like ever since she started doing that. And she was like, Pete, you're special, don't you think you're special?
Right.
If you're special, you can't be with a manager that's not treating you like you're special,
right? And that's true for anybody. Anything you're doing, you have to be with somebody who makes you feel like you are special.
Yeah. He forever, I was like, hey John, I hey, bro, we said his name, but I was like, I need an agent. I really need a TV agent. I want to go out for TV auditions. I'm an actor, you know? And he was like, well, I've met with people and I can't get what you want. And he was like, oh, I'm hitting my head against the wall. And so I left him. And 2 days later, my girlfriend made a phone call to an agent and was like, hey, my boyfriend is really good. Mm-hmm. I think that
he's been on Letterman. He's had a half hour comedy special on Comedy Central.
And they were like, what? He was on Best Week Ever. He shot 71 episodes. He's obviously good on TV.
Mm-hmm. That was a great VH1 series that should never have been canceled.
Yeah. Should have never been canceled. But, so this agent was like, of course I'll meet with him. Met with me, signed. So 2 days later, my girlfriend did what this guy that I paid tens of thousands of dollars to do nothing.
Well, the amount of work that I got, it was only thousands for me.
So wow.
it was a drop in the bucket. But I, not drop in the bucket, just compared to, for me, it was a chunk. I was glad that when I got into radio, that was sort of my own thing then. I pay no man for that. Except for the government that does happen.
I don't think that you should. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you're at Rosemont this week, the Rosemont Zanies.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite clubs.
It is awesome. The last two nights have just been magical. And God, tonight we had this lady that was like, she was so drunk that she just like, in the middle of my set, the set was just killing. And she just stood up and gave a monologue.
What?
Like, just, you know, one of the, she was
so
like,
random.
Yeah, she just stood up and she goes, I wasn't even talking about marriage or anything like that. And she stood up, she goes, him and me were married for 18 years and then we got legally separated for several years and now we're dating again. I was like, this is insane. And the crowd laughed and I like toyed with her a little bit and whatever. And the guy just looked like, yeah, we're breaking up again.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
Poor guy.
Yeah, that's a little bit bizarre. Well, we have so many of those that happen throughout the years, don't we?
It was, yeah, we've had...
You'll remember that one for a while.
I'll remember this one. And then, yeah, that monologue, like, she just randomly would stand up. It was like an SNL skit, like, where you're just like, by the end, the audience is like, okay, this is happening again.
Wow, like, okay, enough about you, Mr. Comedian guy with the microphone. I've got something to say.
Yeah, imagine someone in the front row standing up, turning around, addressing the crowd. Like, even, let's say that even the president of the United States came to a comedy show and did that. People would not accept it.
No,
they go, hey, stop it. We're here for a different thing.
Yeah, that is bizarre. And it's one of those things, too, where the club isn't quite sure what to do either, right? Do they go over? It's awkward for management, although I kind of think you got to go over and say enough or out.
That's what they did. Yeah, they have a really cool, tough-looking bouncer that,
yes, they,
you know,
do,
told her to shut up. But, like, her thing was, in her brain doesn't work right. Mm-hmm. So they were like, hey, shut up.
She's a little touched.
Yeah, she's a little, yeah, and touched by whatever, and then touched by alcohol, and,
right,
you know, whatever it is. And so she would be like, okay, yeah, shut up. I remember, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. And then her brain would be like, no one ever told me anything. Speech.
It's my turn.
It's my turn to talk.
Man.
And then, like, the funniest thing was, like, I would just, like, interrupt her during her speech, and she would turn around and be like, like, I can't believe you're interrupting me.
Oh, my God.
What a crazy person.
Yeah, that's an incredibly crazy person. Well, yeah, it's unfortunate because we've talked about this on the show before with a lot of comics when, you know, people think they're helping sometimes, too. She obviously didn't think she was helping. She just felt that it was her turn.
Yeah.
But when people heckle, I had to leave a party. My son Griffin, all the parents got together for this. It's called Piepalooza. Mm. And we all bring different kinds of pies. And one of the dads goes, hey, I hear you're a comic. And he started telling me this story about how he likes to heckle comics because he loves the verbal jujitsu. And there was a point where my 12-year-old was like dragging. I was yelling at this guy. There was a moment, Pete, I'm not even kidding you, where I started invoking the names of my dead friends. Of Greg Giraldo, of Mitch Hedberg, of comics who I know could never live in the middle. The highs are always high and the lows are always low.
Yeah.
Right? Because they would come off stage because some asshole had yelled at them during the set. The material they had written, they were brilliant comics.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, you never could maintain that sort of like happiness. Yeah.
Oh, is that what?
It's all right. I was yelling at him about my friends who, you know, just not specifically because of hecklers, but things that happen along the way in our career where we're just trying to do our art.
Yeah.
And you think you're helping the show.
They're not helping the show. But that kind of a person that doesn't understand, you know, the behind the scenes thing, we don't like that we prepared a show, that we want to deliver a show and we don't want to be interrupted.
Right.
They're like, we're helping.
It's so bad. There was actually an article, like in the Tribune, saying, yeah, you should be encouraging people to heckle.
That's not, no, it's never going to be a better show if you heckle. It's always going to be a better show. But the problem is that it's entertaining when you heckle, like, because the comedian is very good, and that guy wanted to engage in verbal jujitsu, but you're not going to win against the person who has razor sharp wit and is so quick and... Yeah. You're just never going to win that fight.
And we each have developed, we've done this, if we've done this long enough, we've developed our own style of dealing with it. I go into the crowd, Pete.
Oh,
I
you
walk
do?
Off the stage into the crowd.
You Phil Donahue?
I mommy the crowd.
That's great. Oh my God, I love that.
I walk up to the table and shame them in front of everybody. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by comedian Pete Lee, who is performing at Zanies in Rosemont. You can go to zanies.com, click on the calendar for Rosemont. He's there. He's got two shows Friday, two shows Saturday.
And, yeah, yeah, I can't, like, it's so weird to think that, like the best nights as a comedian are Friday and Saturday.
They are.
Like, it's already here.
The good nights are here.
Yeah, the good, and I love,
but the weeknights are good at Zanies in Rosemont because it's such a great room. Like, there's no bad crowd there except for when a woman randomly... You know, stands up and gives a speech.
But I mean, it was a really big crowd last night, and they were almost like weekend shows on a weeknight. But,
right.
That's how good that club is.
Well, that whole entertainment district in Rosemont is spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to the bowling alley?
No, I need to get out this weekend.
You gotta go bowling.
I need to go indoor skydiving.
Oh, I was just going to ask. You guys got to do that. You got to go indoor skydiving.
Is it cool? Have you done that?
It's so cool. I've done it now.
He's actually regular skydived.
I have also real skydived, which is way cooler, by the way.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because
which one?
Like, you know when you go bowling?
Yes.
Skydiving, like, you put on bowling shoes, right?
Yeah.
And, like, spray the weird powder in there. But, like, when you go indoor skydiving, you put on, like, the suit that's, full suit, the full body equivalent of bowling shoes that everyone that's gone there has put on. Do they spray it with powder?
Like, I think they spray it down a little bit. They might even wash it.
I would think they've got it because, I mean, if I was to do it, you know what happened to me with CrossFit when I jump rope.
Stay in it for a little bit, too, because you don't, like, get in it and then immediately go in. You're kind of in it for a little while. And I imagine some people may sweat. Either during or before, although when the wind is going at you, it would air a lot of that out.
Really dries you out?
Yeah, I would think so.
The actual skydiving is their dry cleaning process for the stuff.
They make you take it immediately off after you get out. So,
funny.
Yeah, they probably wash them.
Can you get hurt doing it?
Not unless you're an idiot. Not unless you try to fly around really and you don't know how to do it.
Do you have to sign sort of like if I kill myself, it's my fault? Those,
yeah. The same for real skydiving too, by the way. You sign that waiver and you would do nothing to cause your own death. You're strapped to some other dude.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever skydived?
The day before I was going to go skydiving, they called me. And I was up in Minnesota, and we were going to drive over into Wisconsin, and we were going to go skydiving. And it was me and my ex-girlfriend, someone who I can talk about. She was like, I want to skydive, you know, bucket list, yada, yada. We get a phone call that was like, yeah, your skydiving for tomorrow is canceled. And I was like, well, why? Why is it canceled? Is it going to be cloudy? Is it going to rain? And they go, no, we lost one. I was like,
what?
Where were you going to go skydiving?
It was like over near Hudson, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I
went skydiving in Wisconsin. You're not talking about Skydive Midwest, are you?
I don't think so. No.
Okay, good.
But like, yeah, they're like, we lost one. And I was like, what does that mean? And they're like, well, you know, every once in a while in the skydiving community, we lose one. And I was like, what? A person? Like a person, and you're just saying we lost one, and then I decided in that moment I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to go skydiving.
Right, that would kind of be a deterrent, I think, for me as well. Now, even your story is now a reason for me to never skydive. I think.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
You could get that same call from the people that made your car every once in a while.
We lost one.
Yeah,
we lost one.
People die, and the percentage of people who die skydiving is smaller than the people who die.
It's because less people skydive.
But the percentage,
so
though,
many.
I'm talking about the percentage though, Patty.
Do you ever see that sign over? We have a sign over the Kennedy that tells you how many fatalities we've had over the during the course of the year. I don't know what number we're up to.
Driving fatalities?
Yeah, driving fatalities in the state of Illinois. There's like a running tally. It's very strange. And I mean,
like a McDonald's sign.
How many have been served? Yeah, it is.
Oh, God.
And it's very morbid because every day the number goes up and you're like, someone's not going to make it off this road tonight.
Oh, wow.
It's very weird. Oh. And then people start thinking, well, is it going to be an even number? Are we going to go over 1,000? Yeah, it's very odd and unfortunate.
Just to get back to the skydiving, the percentage the percentage of people who pass away is 0.0007.
Okay, so that's good.
That is, how many people pass away from, I'm just kidding, I don't know how many people die from car accidents.
I think, Google that.
I think when I turn like 75, if I make it to 75, I want to go skydiving because, like, you're all wrinkly and the air would just, like, push the wrinkles out.
Right. Like, you're sort of an automatic facelift.
See,
for you.
Then yeah. Do you risk it all dying and landing? Like, you would die from heart attack in the, during the, you know.
That'd be the coolest way to die.
Or break every bone on landing, right?
That's true. You're right.
You got to be careful. You get a little brittle
as you
get older.
Lean back, let the other guy handle everything.
Yeah. Maybe you just want to have, like, maybe a Mai Tai when you're 70.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I could do that.
I'm just saying.
I love the equivalent there. Let's change the skydiving thing. Maybe just have a drink.
Right, Esmeralda, is there anything on your bucket list? Esmeralda Leon is up in news and traffic. Esmeralda, do you have something on your bucket list?
Travel?
I feel like we could help you with that, like, sooner than rather
I would,
later.
You know, I wouldn't mind going to the, like, very, you know, like China and
Ooh.
All those places, Tokyo.
I just got back from those places.
Pete's performed in China.
Ooh.
You should go with him next time.
You want to come with me? You don't want to go with me on an awesome...
No, I don't mean, like, not with you. I just...
It seems like a lot of effort. I don't want to go to China. It seems very crowded.
Well, that and I'm very iffy with bathroom situations.
How are the bathrooms, Pete?
Well,
like,
they don't have toilet paper. They
The squat pits. And Craig, what was this?
Sold.
What was this gesture?
The
what was
duvet or whatever it is? They got the
they have bidets.
No, that's
they have bedding.
It's called.
They have bedding. It's so comfortable.
I don't even know what a duvet
comforter
is. Comforter covers.
It's a comforter cover.
Okay, good.
It's a comforter.
It's like an envelope.
It's a bidet. That's what I'm. That's the word I was looking for.
No. That's a toilet still.
Yeah, but they shoot the water instead of the... What is that called?
It's called bidet.
Okay, cool. Good
Like a bidet is fancy, but a duvet. Like you actually... Like a very fancy comforter cover that you wipe your butt with that. Like that is like the essence
really
of luxury.
It's really weird what they do in China, yeah.
That's right. Yeah, Egyptian cotton only.
I don't like the squatting. I'm not a big fan. That's why I don't think I could ever go to India.
Do you know what I did? I tried the squat pit, but my girlfriend was like, she came over and she was like, she goes, I just bought something that's going to revolutionize our lives. And I was like, what is this? And she had a big box and she took it out and it was the Squatty Potty.
Heard of that.
Yeah, go on YouTube, watch Squatty Potty. They have a video of a unicorn.
Only if you Google Nose Frida. You do that and I'll do Squatty
Potty.
But you're still with the Squatty Potty. You're still on a toilet.
You're on a toilet, but you're like sort of squatting on it and it like just unkinks your colon hose. And it just is the most amazing thing on the planet. So when I went over there... I was FaceTiming with Emily and she was like, did you try the real thing? Like, did you do it? And, when I was in Singapore, when you go into the bathroom, there's urinals and then there's squat pits and that's it. And I had to go. And so I tried the squat pit and it was amazing. It was weird to take off my pants and hang them on the back of the door. That was weird. But it was.
Do you have to do? Is that a necessary moment in that?
Well, yeah,
experience.
Kind of. I mean, because you're like
balancing. Do you have to balance and squat? Well, I don't understand what's happened.
Well, and I'm also curious. Is his colon hose changed forever now? Is it?
Is it permanently unkinked?
Yeah.
Once you go squatty potty, you never go back. Is that what? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm in a hotel this week, and I didn't travel with my squatty potty, so I have to go. Old school.
Can you try? How big is a squatty potty? It's basically a little ledge around the base
of
your toilet.
Stool.
Yeah, it's like a 7 or 9 inch, depending on the height of your toilet. It's a 7 or 9 inch little like stool that kind of like wraps around your toilet, and then you push it out a little bit, and then you put your feet on it, and you're in like a squat position on your toilet, and just you guys out there in Radio Land, just treat yourself.
Google squatty potty. I don't know how to discuss this.
No,
moment.
Don't Google squatty potty. Do not Google.
Well,
that.
Did you see the unicorn and the rainbow?
It's adorable.
Yeah, it's very cute. Have you seen the unicorn that it has a squatty potty?
Yeah, it's going. Yeah. So have you watched that video yet?
I Googled Nose Frida yesterday, I got the squatty potty unicorn with the rainbow. Yeah,
Nose Frida. That's great.
Do you know what Nose Frida is?
No.
Well, I you know how you did best year ever.
Best week ever.
Best week ever. I did the Cheesemate Club for MTV 3, like the Spanish. Yeah, exactly.
Cheesemate Club.
Cheesemate Club. And I had to do the nose Frida is a tube for new parents. And in order to clear the snot out of a baby's nose, rather than using a bulb, you insert one end of it. Yeah, you suck it out. And yes?
Emily's brother just had a baby, and then the baby had some stuff, and then one of their friends brought it over there, and then I witnessed my girlfriend suck snot out of a baby's face. And I was like, that's love.
You got to really commit to do that.
Okay, so I do know what a nose Frida is because I've seen
Frida.
It.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
it's a snot tube.
The worst part
Sucky
was
snot tube.
She sucked the snot out, and then when she did it, she lifted it up and pointed it at me like she was gonna like spitball it at me, and that was the funniest part.
And if she had done that, and you withstood that, would that also be love?
That would be love.
Yeah, that would also be love. We are hanging out with comedian Pete Lee. Coming up, joining us will be comedian Jim Flanagan, who has an event next week for the holidays, and find out how you can help raise some money for charity. More after this on 720 WGN. It's pretty late. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by comedian Pete Lee, who hopefully has not broken any legal contracts during his appearance on the show. Jim Flanagan's just driven in from Rockford, Illinois, where he was performing tonight, didn't you?
How you doing?
I was reading your Facebook post.
You're great.
I feel like we just follow each other all the time.
Yeah. Were you at the clock tower?
I was at Kryptonite. It's a little bar out there that does a bar show, and I needed something to do before coming out here, so I figured I would. And I listened the entire way in.
Yes. So you know that Pete is legally bound to not discuss certain things.
Can I say, by the way, I was at Pete's show on Wednesday. A good friend of mine was there with him, and it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I heard tonight's heckler was even worse than the one Wednesday.
You had a heckler on Wednesday?
It was the weirdest.
You know what it is, Pete? This is what it is, I think.
Her chair closer to me.
You and I we seem friendly and accessible. Mm-hmm. So, like, interrupting our show is just kind of like, hey, well, you're just talking.
You're fine. You're kind. Just, you're going to deal with this. Yeah.
But this, for the first time, like, she wasn't really heckling. She was laughing in such an annoying manner the entire time.
Oh.
For the first, like, everyone's like, oh, we were just talking, don't kick us out. This time they're like, we don't know what to do, because she's literally just laughing.
Oh, really?
She was like,
Did it feel mocking?
No, it was not sarcastic. It was like she was having such a good time that the other crowd members were going, we're having a good time, but like, what can we have? What she's having? Like, is she on Molly for laughter or something? Like,
it's because her colon's not as all kinked up. Maybe she needed to have her colon tube.
She kinked her colon. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, the last night was a really weird experience because after the show, the group of girls that was like laughing and then they were wooing the whole time. And I have like a bit about girls wooing, and usually like I do the bit and then they stop.
Right.
But they're the whole show, they're like, woo, woo, woo. And then afterwards,
I like how you get cross-eyed on that last one that you did.
Woo! Yeah. but they came up to me and they're like, you're going out to the bar with us. And I felt like one or more of them were like interested in me. And I was like, no, I have a girlfriend, I can't. They were like, and I talk about my girlfriend in the thing. I talk about how she's on TV and in movies and she's beautiful and whatever. And these girls were still like, come on, she'll never know. And I'm like,
ew.
I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna cheat on my TV star girlfriend with some random. Like I'm gone for four days.
Random.
I can't keep it in my pants. You know, like it was just the
expectation that you're a guy on the road.
You're a guy. Of course you're going to cheat.
You've got random in every port.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't really have ports, but...
But they were to the point where when they were leaving, Cindy, the manager, like was like, okay, now you guys have to go. Like she was like...
Oh, good.
Because she was like... she saw it like...
She swept in.
Yeah, she swept
in.
Did
she sweep or did she swoop?
She swooped.
I would say she swooped.
She swoopishly swept in and helped me. But like, that's a weird thing as a guy, because like you say no and then you say no again and you say no again and you're like, I don't know what to do here, because like these girls are right. Most guys don't say no and they won't say no five times. But like, you know, I'm in a different situation than a lot of
guys. I say no four.
You say
four,
no four.
Four is max.
Yeah, five. I'm okay.
Max.
Yeah.
You know, but like,
hear that, ladies? For Jim, you gotta push past that fourth no.
It's the barrier. It's the wall.
It's the wall.
The fourth no. That's the name of your book. That's gonna be your New York Times bestseller. But then they finally left. But like, I mean, there's a way that like, I feel a little bit studly that, like, these girls wanted me so bad with their wooing that the manager had to remove them.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
With the wooing.
With their wooing.
I've never, on the road, I didn't really get I mostly got hit on by comics. I never really got hit on by guys in the audience.
Yeah, that makes sense. Comics are dirtbags.
No.
Not us. Not me and Flanagan.
No. And even then, I mean, like, I've been in my relationship with my husband since I started. So I've always been kind of off limits, I guess, in a way.
Yeah. I mean, has there ever been, like, I ask this because, like, in my current situation, like, because of my last one, like, there's been jealousy.
Mm-hmm. Because I had started doing comedy before Steve and I started dating, he never felt threatened by the fact that part of what I fell in love with, too, was that he was confident enough in our relationship to not feel threatened by the fact that I was going to be traveling a lot, that I also have what's kind of I started in the 90s, and mm-hmm. it's a pretty masculine job. I mean, there were very few, there were only two female headliners in the city of Chicago. And, it's still a male dominated industry.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, that is very confident of him. In my current situation, you know, like, my girlfriend has gone from being like at the same level to me to being like, she's on the side of buses in New York, she's really doing well. And now we go to these famous people parties, and then, like, I'm standing there, and, like, famous dude who's really handsome and probably has a jet comes up and, you know, is like, hey, I just saw you at that premiere. You know, you were on the big screen, Emily, and, like, he's hitting on her. And I'm standing there like, well, there goes my girlfriend.
No.
You know, and, like.
No, because she's always had that choice.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? As a woman, she's chosen you.
Yeah. That's the thing that I went through a little field of insecurity, but she was like, listen, number one, I love you. Number one, you accept me for me. Those guys wouldn't.
Right.
And number three, I think whatever.
Or C.
She's like, those guys probably sleep with six girls a week and they all have herpes and I don't want to get that.
Oh, there you go.
All of that's very true, but you're also screwed, man. I mean, it just
no,
no.
Yeah, probably.
At some point here, man, I was just gonna.
Yeah, she's going to find somebody better.
Right. And she stars in that movie with that one guy. I think he's Brad Pitt. I think that's his name.
Yeah, he's going to just hijack her.
Yeah,
but I think of those things, for me, what was most important was that Steve never, like, judged me for the kind of comedy that I did, the outrageous things that I do in public. Because mm-hmm. I'm a little loosey-goosey in public. Like, he often feels like my handler. He's like, where's the nearest exit in case we have to get out of here very quickly?
Wow.
You know, if there were kids, like, there were kids staring at my son. I was telling this story when we started the show tonight. There were kids staring at Declan while we were at this Winter Wonderfest, and then they started asking questions. What's wrong with him? What's the matter with him? Is he going to get better? And I was trying to be patient. I tried answering their questions, and I started getting a little bit belligerent. Like, okay, Declan, these boys are just staring. Now we're just in line with some rude children. And then finally, they kept staring at him and kept, like, and then another mom, actually, Craig, I didn't tell you this. Another mom had to come over and tell them that they were being rude to her kids. They had cut in front of them. So it was, on top of that, like, that sort of emboldened me. So when one of the moms came over to talk to them, I go, are you with this group of boys?
Mm-hmm.
And then I explained to her what had happened. I introduced myself first, but I don't think my husband would have done that. He would have just been like, you know, he would never even address those boys.
Yeah, I'm definitely personally attracted to women like that. Like, I like women that have an inner lion in them.
Right.
I like that, and I think that that's biologically attractive because you want a mom. Like for your kids who will growl if somebody's being terrible. And, you know, and women want a man that will do that too, but men have to toe that line between being assertive and getting your butt kicked.
Well, I like being with Steve because he doesn't feel threatened when I do that. He doesn't, and he doesn't, like, treat me like I'm crazy. Like, every guy I was with before that was like, do you really have to do that? Is that really necessary? Or, you know, what's wrong with either that kind of thing? Judged. That's why she's with you.
But that's not crazy. Like, I have a bit about that in my set about how, like, we're the only animal on the planet that pretends like the female of our species is weak.
Right.
And then we get surprised when women are like, Hulk smash! You know, like we get surprised.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Jim, you have a great show coming up next week. Tell us a little bit about the, are you doing the Holiday Giggle with Mike Yeo?
Yes.
At Joe's on Wheat Street?
Joe's on Wheat Street next Wednesday, December 9th.
Uh-huh.
It's actually, you're the first person who introduced me to Mike Yeo. Way back in the day, you're the one who got me involved in these gigs, and it's a big charitable event.
I've been doing this so long. I don't. When people tell me these kinds of things, I'm like, oh, that's cool of me.
Keep going.
That was nice.
It was very
no,
nice.
No, my pleasure. No, I and it's always I don't do it very often, so it's that means something, just so you know.
Well, thank you. It was great.
Because you have to put your name on the line when you recommend somebody.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a big charitable event. 10 comics, 10 charities. It's a big way to raise funds for charities all around the city. Some great local comics. We just added two hosts, Joey Villagomez and Pat McGann.
Oh, wonderful.
Are hosting the two rooms as well. Mm-hmm. So it's a great time. Just a great opportunity to be able to come out and just give back a little bit. You know, I mean, so many people come out and see us and support what we do. It's just very nice to have an opportunity where everything, every dollar that comes into the room is donated back to these 10 charities.
And so which charity are you representing?
I don't know yet.
Okay, excellent.
They tell us that day. But it's one that's really near to my heart. It's my favorite charity,
excellent.
I will tell you next Wednesday.
Well, and I've done some fundraisers and performances with you that we've raised money for. It's always been a pleasure to work with you. Hang out. We're going to continue our conversation with Pete Lee and Jim Flanagan. Pete is at Rosemont Zanies. He's got two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. Go to zanies.com for more information. Jim Flanagan is at the Holiday Giggle at Joe's on Weed Street next Wednesday night. You can go to MikeyOComedy.com for information about tickets. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by comedians Pete Lee and Jim Flanagan, who, by the way, got some great news today. He'll be performing at the Laugh Fest in Grand Rapids coming up in March. What day are you doing the Best of the Midwest?
March 16th. Wednesday, March 16th.
Congratulations. Pete Lee and I have both performed at... Are you performing again this year at Laugh Fest?
I didn't get the news today.
It's so much fun. It's the greatest festival in comedy. There's nothing like it, and I mean, I've never done anything like that before.
It's like
comedy camp.
Yeah, it's like comedy camp, and you get to hang out with like all these great comedians, mm-hmm. and go watch them and support each other. And it's not like Montreal where you're right. like, oh, there's pressure. Like,
it's not industry.
It's just
people.
Fun, yeah. And you have a really great time. And like, I don't know, I would say that like you have an equal chance to impress important people because a lot of important people go there, but the crowds are so good that you never feel that pressure.
It's amazing. I did the first year. I did the kickoff year. And because it was getting started and they really wanted to get this atmosphere going, we went around, we did like pop-up comedy shows at all the bars around town before the actual like launch of the festival.
Was that in the cars? Like they have cars driving you to
We drove. From? Yeah, we drove around. It was, I have to take a look and see, but I know Kermit Appio was one of the comics I was with, a bunch of guys. It was a blast. You know, some places knew we were going to do comedy. Other places, it was really mm-hmm. just like being on the road again and doing like the middle of the country and just sort of like people at the bar not knowing a show was going to start. Yeah. It was fun and harrowing at the same time. Ralph Harris was a part of that group as well. But you have at this festival, Kathy Griffin's going to be there, Heather McDonald, Seth Meyers. They've got a great lineup.
Sebastian Maniscalco.
Yeah.
It's Seth Meyers is going to be there?
Yes. They got Seth Meyers. Wow. They get big names. When I was there, I did not want to go to the show because I was already not a fan, but it was Bill Cosby. And I did not want to go to that show because I just didn't like him anymore. Anyway, this is 4 years ago.
Wow.
But I have to say, like, not wanting to like him, not even wanting to go to the show, he did an hour and 45 minutes. And then apparently that was the matinee. Another like almost 2 hour show after that. Wow. Of different material.
Yeah.
But here's the story that I don't know if you've heard this about. There were two comics that brought him out on stage, and it was a big packed theater, obviously. It was I want to say it was Tom Cusack and David Dyer, and he put his arms in theirs and they walked out with them, and the crowd went crazy, and he turned to them and he goes, "You hear that? It'll never be for you." Bill Cosby said that to the other comics that walked out with him on stage.
What? Always a sweetheart.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's like...
The audience couldn't hear that, but I know Dave and I know Tom, and that was a story. I mean, like, that's... And they've backed that story up, and I believe it, especially now.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, as comics, you always heard stories about him just being a giant jerk.
And that's why I had stopped liking him years before.
Yeah, and I was like, you can't be that big of a jerk and do comedy in sweatpants, you know? Like,
he was wearing Crocs.
Yeah.
And a shirt, that sweatshirt that said, "Hello, friend." It was mm-hmm. so... But that was not to tarnish your... Because the Laugh Fest in Grand Rapids, and by the way, Chicago, and everyone in the area, Amtrak, get on a train, go to Laugh Fest in March. It is so much fun.
Yeah.
Get your hotel reservations now. Get your tickets for Laugh Fest. Go to the Laugh Fest. Go see Jim. Go support our very own
Best of the Midwest. It's
Best of the Midwest.
Fun.
Yeah,
a lot of Chicagoans on it.
Yep, so Russ Williamson,
Sinéad Denny.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm a little bit jealous. I've gone twice.
Yeah, I want to go again. I'm actually performing at Dr. Grin's in Grand Rapids next weekend, so I'm going to start campaigning for you.
Yes,
I'm
going to
be
hey,
audience, every audience, I'm going to be like, vote Flanagan so
vote
he wins the
Flanagan.
Best of the Midwest.
Thing. Yeah, that's a good idea. What's the grand prize this year?
$2,500.
Nice.
So it's good. I'm excited because it's my first invite-only festival. You know, and like you get from a level where you're submitting and paying and sending tapes and everything, and then just one day someone emails you and it's like, hey, you didn't have to do any of that. We just like you. And you're like, are you sure?
Nice.
You know, and they're like, yeah, we really want you to come here on your own merit. And it's just a cool feeling the first time that happens.
Yeah, that's a cool feeling.
Yes,
that's,
it is.
That's great. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I couldn't be happier. I like that is so. That's such a cool. We know that moment. That's a huge moment in comedy.
Yeah, it's very fun. Yeah.
You're going to have so many more of those moments.
Well, thank you. And it's the week after I'm doing Brad Garrett's Club. So
you're doing Vegas.
I'm doing Vegas at the MGM. So I have a 10-day span where if I live through it, I get to go to Grand Rapids. That's kind of my prize for surviving 10 days.
I think
in
that
Vegas.
You will survive 10 days in Vegas. And then you have to survive March in Grand Rapids, by the way.
That's true. It could be just as bad.
Do you know yet what hotel you're staying at?
I don't know yet.
Did you say the JW? Or at the older, like the...
Amway.
The Grand. Amway Hotel. Amway. I said, that one's nice, but the JW is fantastic.
Yeah, that's the thing about that hotel is like, they're like, you're staying at the Amway? It's the nicest hotel in Grand Rapids. And you're like, no, you're saying that.
Yes.
like it's not. It's just...
It is the town that the Amway kind of built. Mm-hmm. But they have such a great art scene there, too. They have a great hospitals. It's a wonderful town. That's a place I've thought about. If it wasn't so cold, that would be a place I would retire to someday.
My favorite part was that they have this Rosa Parks Park. And with a statue of Rosa Parks and whatever, and I was like, oh, I thought that she was from, like, Birmingham or whatever. And they're like, yeah, but she came here one summer.
Yeah.
And I was like, but you know what? She was a great person, and like we have statues of George Washington in towns that he wasn't from. So yeah, you should have a Rosa Parks Park.
Yes, you should. That's absolutely that's necessary.
She came here one summer.
That was, I think that a couple times, but it's happened where you arrive somewhere and someone has your name, like waiting for a driver with your name on it. That's Laugh Fest is like that because they have a lot of volunteers all over the city. They're available to drive you wherever you want to go. There's a car dealership that donates their cars so that the volunteers can. Did you take advantage of that?
Yeah, they picked me up from the airport in a Porsche Cayenne, and I was like,
"Yeah,
what?"
I was in a Cadillac.
Normally, like when you get picked up to do a comedy club or anything like that, it's like the MC, and then and he picks you up. He's like smoking pot. You're like, should I drive? And like you have like a million Mountain Dew cans underneath your feet.
Yep.
In the front seat, and
he's like clear off a spot for you.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about this. I should have cleaned this out. Sorry about that.
Yeah. And like so to get picked up in a Porsche Cayenne, I was like, okay, I've arrived. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And Gilda Radner's brother.
Yes.
Like is there every year, so you just like get to talk to him, and he'll tell you this guy, like he comes there because I think the rest of the year nobody listens to him, and he comes there and like all these great people just appreciate how wonderful he is, and he'll talk to you for 3 hours. He's great.
The legacy of Gilda Radner is felt really throughout that city, and also, and she's not from there. It's just that they have this great
Rosa Parks.
But they have the best, it's the Red Door, the Gilda's Club for cancer patients, for survivors, for family members. It's really a remarkable place and just one of the best places in the world to go. If you are dealing with cancer, they're so welcoming, and they I'm still in touch with a lot of them on Facebook. A lot of people want to know when I'm coming back, and apparently I wasn't invited back this year. I can't be greedy. I mean, like not that many people got to go twice.
I mean, come on, Flanagan's taking up all our spots.
I know. What
all
is
I know
that?
Is now if I don't get a Cayenne picking me up from the airport to take me to the JW
We've
Marriott,
built this up.
I'm
Pete, we built this up too much.
We built it up too much.
The MC of this car is going to take me to the Days Inn, and I'm like, this is not what Pete and Patty told me.
Yeah, this is not at all. Like,
you're in the
I
best of the Midwest,
this.
Kid. You are.
Yeah, when do you get the information? When do they send you the contact stuff?
I have no idea. I just said yes, please.
Yes.
And I just sat and waited with my mouth shut until today when they made the announcement.
That's so very, very cool.
Thank
congratulations.
You. Very cool. Yeah.
It's going to be just as nice, if not nicer, for you than it was for us. Like, I mean, because like every year it gets better.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like every single year it gets, they top themselves, and it's, You're going to like get there and somehow they're going to be like, would you like Jerry Seinfeld to help you put together your set list?
That's,
like, that's how amazing this festival is.
Yeah. Awesome. And there's comics again from all over the country. I hung out with, I was hanging out with somebody just talking to her for a while. It turned out to be Jeannie Gaffigan. It was Jim Gaffigan's wife. And so I hung out with him for a while and they were both very cool. I mean, just, it's really just comedy camp. Everyone just chill. You know?
She's amazingly funny too.
Yeah, I think she does a little bit of his writing. I'm not sure. Yeah,
did you see the thing that Jim posted after he performed for the Pope? Because like I think there's like a backstory. I don't know. I might be telling.
But he got booed when he opened for the Pope. Did you see that?
I didn't see that. No.
Oh, yeah. He was telling a joke about he was hoping Philadelphia was nice to the Pope because they weren't very nice to Santa.
Oh, that's funny.
He did that joke, yeah. And he got booed. And it's a big outdoor event. You know, you're basically doing comedy for the sky. You know, people are still filing in. They're not all there.
Yeah.
Now, hardly any of them are there to see Jim Gaffigan.
That's so funny.
What did he post after opening for the Pope?
So his wife's brother played big on Sex and the City. He's Chris Noth.
Really?
Because her maiden name was Noth.
Jeannie Gaffigan is Chris Noth's sister?
Sister, yeah.
And no.
They're from Milwaukee.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. We can Google it. We can whatever. We look to Craig. We're like, will you Google that? But anyway, I think that like everyone in their family has like married very well. And then like Jeannie married Jim.
Right.
You know, and like, so like Jeannie comes from this family that like they're impressive and they marry impressive people. And so he posted an Instagram and it was like his mother-in-law meeting the Pope. And it was like at Chris Noth, your move, checkmate, or like whatever. it was like taunting his brother-in-law, like hey, now I'm the golden child.
That's
of the family.
Fantastic.
How funny is that?
It's a bizarre circle of competitiveness.
Yeah, but it was like the one of the funniest things that I've ever seen. Like, just like, how funny is that your mother, you introduce your mother-in-law to the Pope, and it's like, yeah, how great am I?
Top it now. I dare you. Look, we are hanging out with comedians Pete Lee and Jim Flanagan. More after this when we come back on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN.
We didn't have time for it. We didn't have time to talk about it. It did not make the show. It had to go. Maybe next time. I don't know. This is the end of the show. We gotta go. The end of the show. Do-si-do. I know we didn't get to it.
The elevator is in fine form tonight, Craig. Our guests are a little confused. Pete Lee and Jim Flanagan. Wow, we were talking about Jim Gaffigan before the break. We live stream on WGNRadio.com. So part of the fun is to.
That was live.
That was live streaming.
Yeah,
yes.
I am sorry.
No,
I'm so confused.
You're video proof.
You were mostly looking at us and laughing a little bit.
Part of my favorite part is watching the cameras and seeing how confused guests are.
Yes.
When they just watch you dance and they're like, are we supposed to too?
Oh, that's funny.
We try to tell our guests and then they're like, I told them, I said, this is where we dance. And they're like, okay. And then you look, and then there's just, I always point at Craig so they know that I'm not just like dancing by myself.
I always feel that pressure actually too of explaining it through my motions.
Yes.
Since I'm on the other side of glass.
This is what we do. Right. We're doing this.
It's okay. We're both doing it.
Simply crazy.
You explained it very well through interpretive dance. Right?
Yeah. Yes. It was really funny because I can tell that you guys have done this so many nights. That like dancing, the biggest thing is just like being comfortable.
Yes.
And not being self-conscious. That like I looked over at you, Craig, and you've danced so much that you were like, you looked like a really good dancer because you were just like, yeah, I'm feeling this. Well, this is what it feels like to dance.
And it also has the added advantage of not being on camera.
Yes, he's on camera.
Yeah, they got a shot of me. Okay. Don't worry about that. But I like the fact that you mentioned the self-confidence thing because I have now danced in front of a whole lot of people that I never expected to dance in front of, all of our guests. I had to do it by myself. So,
yeah, he's in the booth. He's away from us. He's isolated.
Yeah, it's great.
Plus, he just is recovering still from a hernia surgery.
Yeah, I kind of hurt myself that time.
Did you?
Oh, no.
I was wondering about the elevator because it was on the cables.
It shouldn't always lean all the way back. It should just kind of stall.
Yeah, I think you just top out like at the...
Cool.
Yeah, I think you just, you know, like in between floors, you know, when the elevator gets stuck.
I'll just get caught.
And you got to pry the doors open.
That sounds terrible.
So this what happens is we, you know, there are stories that we decide we're going to talk about during the show, and invariably we don't get to them all because we get into other conversations. And I'm going to go ahead and wager a bet that we didn't hit a single story we intended
not
to.
Not a one.
Not a one.
Not yeah,
one.
We talked about a lot of random stuff.
We talked about our managers.
None of that was planned.
Talked about relationships. Right. Talked about hecklers. Mm-hmm. What did we forget to talk about, Craig? was there a serious story? A couple serious. We don't do
well,
the serious.
There's
one.
Kids that are learning how to code in the UK now. That's a thing with their school. Mm-hmm. They're going to just teach kids how to do computer coding stuff.
Starting at what age?
This is like little children.
Yeah.
Like once you get into school, coding's going to be with coloring and other stuff.
It's remember, they would say like you know you should learn like you know Chinese or you should learn yeah. you know Arabic languages. No, just coding. Learn.
Yeah.
Code. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's how dumb are we.
That we didn't. I was in LA. My Uber driver told me that he was a former special effects specialist, right? That he was a technician on like some of the movies. He'd done Planet of the Apes with Charlton Heston. He had done movies like the Titanic. And he said when he was on the set of Titanic, they had offered all the special effects team to take like computer aided you know special effects classes. And he was like, no, I'm too busy. I don't need that. And I was like, so how's that Uber driving?
Okay. That's not yeah. going anywhere. Is that computer stuff? We're not going to
yeah.
use that.
Yeah.
It'll never happen.
He still does like some like small scale stuff, you know, some particular things that only he and a couple other people can do, you know, in LA. But,
modeling, like yeah. we're like when Godzilla would ruin the town,
exactly.
they actually built a town, and then they'd be like, "Up, he crushed that building on accident. We got to wait 2 weeks and build that building."
Exactly. Yeah, but now it's all computer generated. So yeah, take those classes, everybody.
There is an unstoppable fungus right now taking out the world supply of bananas.
Yes, you and I were talking. Now you are a big banana fan.
I love bananas.
Now I don't wish ill upon bananas.
I think you do a little.
I don't wish ill upon bananas. I just don't
like
bananas.
You do.
I'm with you.
Is it the texture? Is it the smell?
It's everything. When I was a kid, apparently it was the only thing that I would eat.
Yeah, so you over.
And by like 2 years old, I was done. Apparently, I was just like, that's enough. I've had enough bananas
yeah.
for the rest of my
I've
life.
Maxed out.
I will never have one again.
It's
and
diminishing
now,
returns now. Yeah.
They ruin everything.
It makes me gag.
I'm like, the same way.
How about banana? Oh, banana bread. I'm okay. No, not
can't
banana
do
bread.
It.
I like banana. I don't know. Like, I always feel like a good person when I eat a banana.
Yeah.
I'm always like, man, how healthy was I? I ate that thing that didn't really taste that great. And
somehow it's improved your character.
Yeah. I like you know when you get a fruit salad, like the pineapple is pretty awesome.
Yes.
But then like, and then there's like
the
green.
Honey melon.
Yeah, the honey yes. melon. You're like, why is there the most of this in this?
Yeah. Like, I always get disappointed by it. And cantaloupe. Not a fan of the cantaloupe.
Yeah. You're mm-hmm. like, no, just the other stuff.
Yeah.
That should be.
Strawberries, pineapples. Those are good. Some mm-hmm. blueberries. Yeah.
Yeah. And why are there not just tons of cherries in a fruit salad? Just like cherries and pineapples.
They pit them because of the pits.
Oh.
Don't you think?
I don't know. Yeah, but.
Pit him. You're saying go the extra mile?
Just come on.
But Craig is a fan of the
do
bananas.
Do most people not like bananas? This is a new thing for me. I thought everybody liked bananas.
Occasionally I'll get drunk and I'll like try a banana again.
Because
that's the time you're going to try it. You know what I mean? Occasionally I'll drink enough where I'm like, this is the day. I'm going to put this behind me. And the last thing you want to do
no.
is be drunk and eat a food you hate at the same time.
That's really
nothing
funny.
Nothing ever goes well.
Most people eat pizza or cheeseburgers or cheese curds or mozzarella sticks. But you're like,
you're drunk enough around bananas, Pete.
I'm
eventually
bananas.
You're going to give one a go.
I'm going to give another one a chance. Esmeralda, where do you stand on bananas?
You know what? I don't like them mostly because I've read a lot of things about how they have so much sugar.
Oh, yeah.
And that you should probably eat one that's not so ripe, but those kind of taste weird.
Oh, the like slightly greenish ones?
Yeah, so I might as well just not eat any.
There you go. So apparently the fungus can take him, Craig. I don't think it's good for the world if the bananas go.
I don't get it.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. I mean, all the gorillas will be really mad.
They'll be very mad.
That's funny. There's that saying like, well, you know, like I'm real bananas over her. Like that actually means like, I don't really
that's
like
not
her.
The same. That is not at all the same.
Oh, man.
By the way, the Game of Thrones, their new trailer is out. So I know Patty's been into that.
Yeah, not at all.
Really, really
not
hard.
Even a little bit.
Super
I tried.
Into it.
Do you guys watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. It's there's too much mud. It's a very wet show. Like everything
you don't
is,
like the wetness?
It's all,
the moisture levels of the show.
Everything feels like it would smell and be sticky and splattery and just messy.
It's texture, same as bananas.
Exactly.
You're not happy
I can't.
With it.
I can't. I can. It's very sensory overload. Although I love the show Fargo, which is all snow and ice.
Uh huh. What about Walking Dead with all the gore and that's a lot
that
of moisture
it's just,
too?
Yeah, that's exactly that. Good point. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of flesh falling off of people and that's it's very messy.
That I like Game of Thrones. I mean,
Craig's a big fan.
Yeah, I like to. It's funny that they always introduce like the premiere is this Thursday or this Sunday, and I'm like, yeah, but I wait five episodes and then I watch them back to back to back.
Oh yeah, it's better that way. Yeah, you can kind of just devour them.
You devour them.
Craig's has a podcast called You Binge Challenged, so he has conversations with people that like. I think we're gonna do Fargo.
Yeah. In a couple weeks, we're going to do Fargo when we're both off the radio.
Yeah, so we can maintain our presence on the air. Yes, yeah. We have a lot of time off coming up. But they've done shows like MASH and...
We did MASH, The Wonder Years. There's been a bunch of different shows. Someone in the station typically challenges me to watch a show. For a week, I binge watch the show, and then we talk about just the show.
They've done Lost.
We did Lost.
That show makes him angry. I don't know if you watched
it. The end of that show makes me angry. There's 120 minutes of anger for me. Yeah.
They did such a good job for four seasons out of five on that show. My girlfriend, she was like, yeah, I never watched Lost. And I said, you've never watched Lost? You need to at least watch the pilot. And then I spent the next 3 weeks of my life with her only watching Lost again.
Oh, my God. Did you feel like you had to sit there and push the button at the right time?
Yeah, I was just like, I've spent like hundreds of dollars on iTunes, like paying for her to be able to watch the show.
Oh, no.
And then like, but just knowing that it led to nothing.
Oh, boy. Well, hopefully we finish with more than nothing after this on 720 WGN.